everyone, welcome back to Glee Chat. This is episode 87. We're continuing our flashbacks project after a small little break. We're on to the season, the back half of season one, after our sort of delve into the first 13. And it's me, Natalie, and then Caitlin, Jack, and Mitch. And we're all here this week to talk about some episodes from the back nine of season one. So starting from 1.14, hello. But if you want to reach us to talk about these episodes or any episodes you think we should watch or any ones that we've missed that, you know, were a particular special to you, you can get in touch with us on our Instagram. On our Twitter, which is glee_chat. Or you can reach us on this Hyperball post discussing this episode. If you haven't tuned in a while, what we've been doing is going back and watching old episodes chronologically. Not every single episode we're recording about, but picking out some of our favourites or some ones that were particularly important for Glee Chat, you know, that we didn't obviously recap the first time around because the podcast hadn't started. And we are going back and rewatching those in the lead up to season six. We hope to get through at least seasons one and two, if not three as well, though three was when we started Glee Chat originally. But yeah, the at least seasons one and two, talking about, you know, some of our favourite episodes and some of the most important things that happened on Glee, looking back at it now. So yeah, this week we're doing, as I said, Hello, and then we've also picked Home, which is episode 16 of season four. And Jack is going to lead us in the discussion of Hello today. So if you want to take that away, Jack, or we can say hi to everyone first. How's everyone doing?
Real good. Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Mitch?
Good. Jack? Good.
Caitlin?
Good.
Yeah. We took a little while to get a time when all four of us could get on to record, hence the short break. But yeah, so we're all back for this one. And then, yeah, Jack's prepared the Hello episode for us.
Cool. So, yeah, so as Natalie said, we're doing 1.14 Hello, and I just got the hyphens because, you know, she focuses on the first syllable. So to start off with the back nine, we see Rachel and Finn together, well, at least in her eyes, but Finn starts doubting his feelings towards her. And then with the influence of Sue, Santana and Brittany try to split the two up, you know, to try and get rid of the Glee Club and sabotage regionals. And then in come Jesse St. James, the leader of Vocal Adrenaline. This is sort of after Finn decides to leave Rachel, I guess. And then towards the end of the episode, Rachel and Jesse end up together. So the assignment of the week is giving the Glee Club a new hello and therefore having the word hello in the song title of each performance. He and Emma try and make things work in their relationship. However, they both agree to sort of spend some time apart and figure out. So Will can figure out who he is, but then, yeah, it's just mess. Because, you know, Will just left his wife. And then he then goes on to make out with Shelby Corcoran, the coach of Vocal Adrenaline. All right, so the first really plot point of this episode, I mean, this episode didn't have a whole great deal in it, but it did in terms of it was just like two really like main plot lines, I guess. But a subtle plot point in the Rachel and Finn storyline is that like we'd end the first 13 with them not even together, but start the back nine with them together. But it is so that Rachel sort of thinks they're dating, even though they're really not. And what I think we're meant to gather from it is that they haven't actually had a proper conversation if they're actually dating. Rachel just assumed they are based on the events that happened in the last episode. And I guess that really does go, you know, it goes well with her character. I mean, it's not surprising Rachel thinks that they're dating because she's, you know, all dramatic and stuff. I'll go to you, Mitchell. What do you think about that? Like, do you think that do you think that Rachel was in the right thinking they're dating? Or, yeah, what do you think about all their situation?
Well, I mean, this is just going to show that Rachel can be a little bit, I don't know if obsessive compulsive is the right term, but she really wants to plan out their dates in that calendar, you know, and Finn is not feeling it. So I almost don't blame Finn for feeling a little bit off put, because although her intentions are coming from a great place, they're coming from a place of love and affection and adoration, they're coming on too strong. So I can't really say that I side with Rachel here. I feel like Finn is in the right in saying that, maybe not in the way he did it, but that he needs time to figure out himself and what's going on with, I suppose, everything going on with Santana and Brittany kind of going after him. Like, I guess to a teen boy, it's a really important thing to go out there and explore your sexuality in a safe way and see what the rights and the wrongs are of dating. And Rachel pretty much was, you know, set for life on dating Finn right here and now. And she had her eyes set in that gold star of Finn, as she has many of those. Finn is one of the brightest in her large collection, you know. He's like that big football jock star. He used to date the cheerleader, and now she's won him over. So, yeah, I really do side with Finn here that it was not the right way of saying it, but it was okay for him to kind of just be like, listen, you need to chill so we can, like, figure things out first. And, I mean, we'll see how the future holds, and maybe we'll come back or whatever, you know?
Yeah, I feel like their relationship now is a good example of how they aren't ready for each other just yet, but how they do grow, how, like, it's hard to explain. Like you said, Rachel just needs to calm down, and then they sort of work well throughout the rest of the season sort of thing. Like, they're not ready for each other. But even Rachel brings up in this episode that she does bring out the best in him, which I think is very true. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, what do you think, Natalie?
I mean, okay, like, I don't think it's, like, as cut and dried as we're seeing on screen in terms of, oh, Rachel's delusional about dating Finn. Because, like, yeah, she is slightly, you know, whack, but they've kissed before and stuff like that. And it's not like she would just think, and it's not like she automatically thought they were dating then or anything like that. Obviously, he was still with Quinn. So I'm assuming that off-screen stuff must have happened, if you know what I mean, like that they were spending a lot of time together, or that they were, you know, they clearly were going on dates, or that they were at least spending time one-on-one, probably had hooked up again in some way. Because, I mean, it seems that, you know, he was kind of like, oh, I think I'm dating Rachel. Like, you know, I think that they were spending a lot of time together probably, and he didn't maybe realize what that meant, or that they both didn't realize what that meant. But I don't think it's just like she's decided, you're my boyfriend now, I've said so, and you have to do this stuff, if you know what I mean. Like, it did seem like she had reason to believe it, like, just not stuff that we had seen on screen. At least that's what I'd sort of like to think, because otherwise it just seems really too weird. Because it's not like last season ended with a big kiss or something from them that you think, oh, you know, are they together? Are they not together? I feel like in that break that they've probably, you know, been increasing their friendship and spending time together, and maybe they kissed and stuff like that. And I think that she probably has reason to think it, if you know what I mean. But it sounds like they definitely obviously haven't had the conversation about it.
Natalie, when is that end-of-season kiss? Is that season one?
Two.
Yeah,
no, one. End of season one.
Yeah. Regionals is when they lose because it was a little bit trashy the way they kissed on stage, right?
No, that's season two.
No, that was season two, yeah.
Oh, okay. Oh, yes, that's what I was referencing in my brain then.
Yeah. All
right. To go off what you said, Natalie, I think what I meant by the events of of the last episode is I mean, I do agree with you a bit, and I can see what you're saying, but to me, it comes from more of a point of because, as you said, that they've kissed before and they've had this, like, weird relationship in, like, the first 13, because Finn and Quinn are no longer together, then that makes her think that, well, now that Quinn's out of the way, now I'm here to step in, now we're a couple sort of thing. That's what I mean, I think it's probably a mixture of both.
I don't know, because she had that conversation with Quinn, you know, after they found out about the pregnancy, and, you know, Rachel was like, I told him because I wanted to break you guys up, and now neither of us have him, if you know what I mean. So it's not like she thought, oh, Quinn's gone, I'm automatically his girlfriend. Like, it's not like that.
Yeah, some time passed.
Yeah. I'm assuming time passed. They continued their closeness and, you know, without really talking about what it meant. And now that's what Rachel thinks.
Yeah, I suppose so. I mean, I think, like, it goes back to, I think a lot of time had passed between the last two episodes. And, I mean, I know there was a lot of time when they first originally aired. But, I mean, that brings up another point, which wasn't really hugely addressed. And I'm pretty sure there's a cut scene, or scene that was cut from this episode of Quinn and Puck telling the group that they're a couple. I think I've read that somewhere. I don't know if that's true.
I think I've seen it.
Because then you get the conversation and what they had where what does Quinn say? She says something like, "If we're a couple now, yada yada," and then Puck says, "I don't dig on fat chicks." I don't know. They say something where it says that they're a couple, and then they go and say some
five same and seem to dated, remember either in I seem to remember that there was a scene cut, and it might have been from this, or it might have been from season two, where they, for the first time, sort of got their act together and said, we're officially together. I actually think it was, I think that was actually a season two thing, but I can't actually remember. It was one of them, but yeah, they definitely have the
Because Quinn and Sam were a couple, and then it was Quinn and Finn again.
Oh, I don't know.
I'd say it would have been this, yeah.
There's definitely, you know, there's definitely implication that they are together. We know later in the season that, you know, after obviously she's not living in Finn's house anymore, before she moves in with Mercedes, she's staying in Puck's place. And, yeah. I mean, I didn't really love that little conversation between Quinn and Puck. It seemed very out of character for both of them, actually. So I just choose to ignore it. But, you know, what can you do?
Yeah, I mean, I'd like to think that it's not as black and white as now that Quinn's gone, Rachel's with Finn, and now that Quinn's not with Finn, Puck's with Quinn sort of thing. That's not how a relationship should work, but okay.
I mean, you know, for as terrible as he is, you know, at various points, there's not really anyone else that cares about Quinn and her situation as much as Puck now. Like, she doesn't really if she's kicked out of home, she doesn't really have anywhere else to go, so I don't know, but yeah.
Yeah. All right, so if anyone's got nothing else to say about that, we'll move on to the next point, which is, oh, and it's sort of in the same plot line, but what do we think about Finn's, like, rapid change in, like, his interest towards Rachel? Like, I mean, I guess it goes back to what we were saying, how a lot of time has passed, but if you look at how Finn viewed Rachel in the first 13, and now he's all quick to be fine going off with Quinn and, Santana and Brittany, are we meant to believe that it is just teenage boy hormones that's making him do that, or is there something else? I mean, Caitlin, what do you think? Do you think that Finn's change towards Rachel is valid, or like, what do you think his motivations are?
Well, it's interesting to me because he doesn't go from being like, I didn't enjoy this date with Santana and Brittany, to just, I should look for other girls. It was, I didn't enjoy this, so clearly I need to be with Rachel. So there's clearly in the back of his mind something going on with Rachel and wanting to be with her, that he immediately goes to get her after that.
Yeah. And then that makes me like more interested because in the next episode he sleeps with Santana, you know?
Yeah. I mean, only after Rachel kind of knocks him back, but yeah, I mean,
I love that moment too, though. That like a virgin montage is great for a lot of reasons.
Yeah, right.
I think it's partly just that the duets that are going on are really pretty.
So all of the music in that whole episode is that Madonna episode. I'm kind of disappointed we didn't. I mean, we can watch it anytime we want, but in terms of recapping it, that all of the music in that episode was really good. But I don't know. I feel like teenage boys are like high school. You know, they're kind of idiots. Like, you know, and I don't know. I think that he probably didn't really. Yeah, I really don't think it was just, like, Rachel forcing him, you know, to date her, if you know what I mean. It sounded like there was something that he didn't quite know what was going on, but he definitely realized that, you know, he liked her. Probably just sort of freaked out about being in this situation that was sort of out of his control, I guess. Like, that he was just like, oh, okay. And even Quinn, you know, didn't really, I mean, she pushed him hard in various ways, but not in that kind of, like, I need you to pay attention to me way. And it just sort of, you know, it seemed to overwhelm him, and I don't really know, you know, I can understand in that sort of moment of being, like, just someone yelling all of this, like, you know, you have to do this, and you have to do this, and I'm so high maintenance for them to be, like, I can't do this, I don't know what's happening, and he just seemed really confused by the entire situation, and yeah, I assume that they, you know, just hadn't really put a label on it, but that it wasn't just Rachel's delusions, given that he did sort of go back to her. It wasn't like, oh, yeah, I just need to find other girls or whatever. Like
he never shuts her down when she brings it up. You know,
the calendar
goes with
and
it.
Stuff like that. Yeah.
He goes with it, and he's like, yeah, I think I'm dating Rachel. Like, if he really didn't want to be, he could have shut it down.
Yeah.
Oh, I don't know about that. Like, I think he just, I don't think, because if he doesn't want to be with it, I don't think that means he's going to immediately shut it down, because that's not sort of who Finn is. Like, I think he's just naive. I just think he doesn't know what to do, that's all. I think he doesn't want to be with Rachel at this point, but he just doesn't know how to handle it. But that makes me confused, because he's wanted her really badly. I would have liked to have seen, like, a conversation. I mean, this is sort of more my headcanon, I guess, of seeing more of Finn's troubles after the baby drama, and that's why he didn't want to be with Rachel, sort of thing. Like,
I mean, he was so he hurt by what Quinn did to him. I mean, he sings the song, you know, "Hello, I love you," and he's like, "I don't know what's going on, I just think that I'm not over her, like Quinn," that's the thing. Like, he sort of does but say
I'm
that.
That. I wanted to see more of that. I wanted to see more of that and make that more of a prevalent plot point, so I could understand Finn's motivations a bit better.
Because if you look at the first half, yes, it's very obvious that him and Rachel are close, and yes, it's very obvious that, you know, Rachel understands him very well and has his best interests at heart probably more than anyone else does. But, I mean, to Finn, he doesn't really know what any of that means, and, you know, even though we know that, you know, him and Rachel are sort of kind of, you know, amazing together, and that the Quinn thing was just, like, shallow and pointless, at this point, Finn doesn't know that, if you know what I mean. He doesn't know that he was, you know, he doesn't know how insignificant his relationship with Quinn will end up being. And he is really, you know, obviously hung up on that at this point. He kind of, yes, him and Rachel have kissed, and yes, they have this weird closeness, but he still doesn't really, hasn't really seemed to identify that. He's never said, "Oh, I have a crush on Rachel," if you know what I mean. He just knows that they're kind of, you know, he knows there's something, you know, something there, but he doesn't really, it's not like, oh, he loves Finn in the same way, he loves Rachel in the same way we kind of know that Rachel loves him. And so I can kind of understand him not really being able to identify his feelings for Rachel properly, even though, you know, we know in the future that him and Quinn are not actually that big a deal. To him, it's still probably kind of a really big deal right now.
Yeah. Oh, definitely.
Well, you know, I have a general question too about what we're going on with Finn and Britannia. Are we meant to really, really catch on to the lesbian relationship going on in Glee, or is it still just as hidden and kind of, I suppose, even like contraband, as you could even say, like as that one statement was of whatever it was in the sectionals episode, you know, there's like one line in the hallway.
I've
only got a little thing to say. I think the way that Britannia was handled in season one was, it was just sort of like a funny, like, kind of joke, and I think there were meant to sort of be sprinkles of more than that throughout. Like, if you just look at Home, like next episode, and I think the song that Kurt sings is Home. I don't know what the title
House
is,
but
Home. They just have a little pinky. They have like a little pinky like grab that they do, and then Santana rests her head on Brittany's shoulder. So it's just little moments like that that they have throughout that I think we are meant to see more of a proper relationship rather than just we have sex for fun. You know?
Yeah, I think as well. I think they threw in that joke in the first 13. Like, they just threw in that one off thing, and they were like, and you know, they could have let it go, or and then they saw the you know, reaction to it, I guess, in the gap. And, you know, this is around the time when they started kind of realizing what fandom was saying and kind of, for better or worse, writing stuff in response to that. And I think they were like, okay, we're going to make this a plot that they are together in some way, if you know what I mean. And maybe it's not very well identified, but, you know, that's going to be their story, that they're together and that, you know, that will end up being the plot, I guess, which it does very much become. But
I remember that moment too when I was first going online and I guess starting just getting into fandom once episode 13 had aired, right? And I remember that even like mainstream media, I remember IGN and specifically wrote like lesbian cheerleaders in Glee. Yeah. Like that was like the review headline, you know? It kind of like exploded from there to where it makes me question whether or not I should ship Britannia at all, because it could have just been. Listen to this though. I'm going exactly off of what you guys are saying.
I'm just laughing at Natalie's reaction.
No, my point is that it really was supposed to be a throwaway line. Everyone else picked it up 10,000 times more. I like it for what it is, but I also don't know if I would have liked it more for what it wasn't. If it was still hidden, if it was still more of an innuendo going on in the background, I might have liked it more. I might have thought that it was stronger. And it's really interesting to me looking at like this parallel universe that we have where Phantom didn't affect the writing and Britannia didn't come up as much as it did because of the Phantom's reaction. And
I think that the ship is less important than, for example, Santana's actual story, but that the ship is what led to Santana's story, if you know what I mean. Because in that first 13 episodes, that you know, there was like a bunch of people in the Glee Club who basically didn't have any plot, if you know what I mean. Like the plot, they had lines, but they didn't have stories focused around them, you know, like Mike, Santana, Brittany, even Tina and stuff like that, and didn't have major plots focused around them. But obviously Santana ended up becoming a leading player in the show, and it's not just as the, oh, a competition to Rachel in the same way Mercedes kind of was. Santana, you know, has her own stories, which came from the Britannia plot, which came, and I know that it was Brad Falchuk, the writer, he kind of took that character and started feeling very kind of protective and possessive over her and, like, gave her these really strong storylines because of the kind of little hints of, you know, what could be, you know, and whether it's about shipping Britannia or not, I think the eventual storyline with Santana, you know, is important, and it did come from them sort of ending up doing that.
Absolutely, no question. Yeah. Santana's storyline of her sexuality coming out, her grandmother disowning her, her learning how to love and move past Brittany, that I think is more of the foreground when, like, the background is Britannia. That's a good point.
Now. Yeah. Yeah, I don't think the Britannia ship is as important as people always go on about it, but it is, it sort of feeds the storylines of those characters. I mean, Brittany's a bit less than Santana's because Brittany's was always like a mess, but, you know.
Well, as a source of representation, it's very important, yeah, because it's a mixed-race couple of the same gender. That is extremely important on TV because that simply did not happen before Glee did it. They're such rare occurrences, and I know that one that I remember citing way back when we were first probably talking about Britannia was on Grey's Anatomy, and it was a hotly contended episode because of two soldiers. One was going into surgery, and I know that they were you know, dating in that episode too. So it's funny to me that, I mean, Ryan Murphy really took Glee from, or Brad Falchuk, as you're saying, Natalie, really took Glee from like 0 to 60 and a blink, yeah, because it wasn't only Kurt, it was Britannia that eventually Clayne and the rest. So it's
like, Clayne.
I dread bringing it up to this point because I just know that there's a lot of opinion going on in Clayne, and there always will be. So, and it's gonna be really fun when you get to the news, guys. That's gonna be great.
Yeah,
lots of cool stuff going on today.
That news.
Yeah. All right. Well, the next plot point in this episode is Jesse St. James. Obviously, he is the leader, the star of Vocal Adrenaline, pretty much the male version of Rachel at this point. And as I said, at the end of the episode, we see Rachel and Jesse pretty much together, even though I guess in the next episode we find out she's not admitting it because she doesn't want to sabotage the club, yada, yada. But Caitlin, I'll go to you first because I know you're a big fan of Jesse St. James, and I think we all are a bit of a fan of him on the podcast. And Natalie, I have some opinions I want to tell you after as well about this. I mean, yeah,
okay.
Because I'm agreeing with you with some of the stuff that you've said before in the past. Yes, so Caitlin, what do you think about Jesse St. James at this point, and what is your big opinion about him?
I love Jesse so much.
You're like, same. I was just like so delighted. I was just like, oh, you are just, you are there and you are great. But sorry, yeah, go on.
He's just so over the top ridiculous, and it is just a joy to watch. Like, it's like, I have a full ride scholarship to a little school called UCLA. Maybe you've heard of it. It's in Los Angeles. Oh my God, I love you so much.
I remember how it felt to get nervous. Like, yeah, he's...
When he and Rachel are in the Carmel Auditorium and he laughs at Rachel, he's like, you're more of a drama queen than I am. I'm like, no, go get married. I love you. They're both so ridiculous and over the top, and I just love it. And he is so obnoxiously perfect.
Caitlin, you know who is really reminding me of right now? The lead character of Gossip Girl, who is like insanely perfect in the same aspects, but will cut you down in the same kind of ways.
Like Serena or Blair?
I'm talking more Blair than Serena. Not natural, pretty perfect. Like, I've worked to get what I have perfect and no one will get in my way.
I think that he's a little less self-aware than Blair. I mean, I'm not a massive Gossip Girl fan, but I think he's a little less self-aware. And I think that's the beauty of him. Like, I think that he is so like Rachel in the same way that he's going to have, like this growth into self-awareness, if you know what I mean. But he's always, in his, like, most histrionic moments, going to go back to being ridiculous. And he's just, like, he's not, I mean, he is arrogant, but he's not condescending to her, if you know what I mean. He's really, like... He really likes, I mean, I know that their entire plot in this season is a bit, like, dodgy, if you know what I mean, and that they, you know, but I do think that he really likes her and really, you know, he's not kind of, there's something to be said for two people being really different and working together, like Finn and Rachel, but sometimes two people are the same and it makes them work really well together. You know, sometimes two people being the same makes them horrible together, but sometimes two people being the same makes them work really well together. And I think that is the Jesse and Rachel situation. And I'd kind of forgotten that he transfers to McKinley, like, until we watched the other episode. I was just like, oh yeah, that happened. I forgot about that. But, like, his presence with Rachel and, like, always holding on to her, and just part of it is the chemistry between, like, Jonathan and Leah, because that's obviously a really big part of why they work as well. But, oh, I wish I could, like, write a college paper on, like, Jesse St. James's character and, like, analyzing it, because he is so ridiculous, but there's something so cute about it. Like, it's not just like, oh, you're arrogant and annoying, and it so easily could be, if you know what I mean. It's like you realize he is just as, like, deluded as Rachel, and it is quite sweet. I don't know. I love it.
And oblivious.
Is it too soon to talk about that egg scene that he does?
Yes, it is too soon. Shush.
Because, give me a reference then, Jack, with your encyclopedia brain. Do you know what episode that happens in?
It's in Funk.
Oh, Funk. Yeah. But we're not going to cover that.
Funk. It's so bad. It's Funk. It's the worst.
But I know it.
Natalie, Jack is turning into Karen. He's liking bad things.
You're allowed to. No, fine. You can like Funk. But whatever. I don't care. Anyway, go on.
Oh, I was going to lead off what you were saying before, Natalie. I know, like, in the past episodes, we've spoken a lot about how we think Rachel should be handled in season 6, and I don't think that there will be time for her to be introduced to another relationship. And I know that I've been against her getting with Rachel, if it was to happen, Rachel getting with Jesse. But I think, like, I've been thinking about it a lot, and I think that time would suit well for both of these characters, and I think eventually they might be able to end up together. I mean, that's all I have to say. I mean, I know I've been pretty against it in the past, but I've been thinking about it, and I'm like, yeah, I think it could be possible.
I think it's the only option that they could show on screen that I would be happy with.
I don't think they could show it on screen, because I don't think that the season 6 needs to be about Rachel getting a new love interest. But, no. Well, I mean, like rekindling, I don't know.
You know, I can definitely, you know, Jesse obviously is never as massive a presence in the later seasons as he is in this one, but every time we see him, he's changed a little bit for the better, but while still remaining his ridiculous self. And it is very parallel to Rachel, and he is, like, he really cares about her, and he really gets her on a level that, you know, not many people do. And yes, they'll probably always have some dramas because they're both ridiculous, but I really do think that, you know, if people can sort of have more than one perfect match, if you know what I mean, he could definitely still be perfect for Rachel. And, you know, if she does choose to move on and not remain, you know, a sad, lonely girl her whole life, which I assume she won't, that he would be, like, he could be everything for her. Like, he would really, you know, and I would love to see that spin-off, just Jesse and Rachel, because I want, like, his character, like, I want to see deeper moments of his character that are obviously there, because Jonathan Groff does it so well, and as time progresses over the show, you know, every time we see him, we see a little bit more of his depth.
Wasn't there a moment recently, though, that we heard about Lea Michele rumored to have her own Glee spinoff. Was that what? Did that take any ground or anything, or was that did that just stay in rumor field? I know that's probably a common rumor, but I could have sworn. Caitlin, maybe you would know better too. Like as in that you write for Hypeable also. I don't know. I swear I saw that got like a story going around where maybe it was something like I don't want to say anything that anyone can quote me wrong as saying, but I think it was like Ryan saying like I would love another show with Rachel. I'd love to continue on with her or something like that.
I don't know about that.
But I could my point was that I could imagine Jesse being a character there because actually wasn't he was just. Wasn't he just cast into American Horror Story?
What?
There was some Glee alum that Ryan Murphy likes a lot that was just cast into American Horror Story 2, so it kind of showed to me that they were in his good graces. I can't remember who it was. Jeez, my memory sucks today. Do you remember who it was, Jack?
No, that was Matt Bomer in American Horror Story, who, I mean, he's not really a Glee alum, but it's just one of Ryan Murphy's little, like, you know. Hey. Like it's like he's got like a collection of actors he's going to use in anything. Like, because Matt Bomer was in The New Normal and The Normal Heart, and then American Horror Story. Like, come on,
I don't know.
That was what we were talking about with the spinoff. It was New York spinoff that I kept talking about, like in season 3. But like, I mean, that wasn't even I don't know. That was in like a midst of speculation what was going to happen in season 4. So yeah.
I'm not really referencing that needing leaks thing, because there was that one time that Watch What Happens Live was going to reveal a big Glee thing, and Chris and Leah were on, remember? And it was like a big deal for everyone on Glee Chat, because I think we all started watching it like at the same time live on our live streams to like get ready to like record an episode of Glee Chat, and it turned out to just be like NeNe Leakes is going to be on Glee, and we're like. What?
Oh. Who is NeNe Leakes?
She's Coach Roswell.
Oh, I know. I was saying, like, you guys at the time probably was just like, who is this girl?
No, we did. Yeah, I obviously had to Google her. I did not know who she was. Yeah, but it was a different moment than that. It was more recent. I don't know. I'll have to try and see if I can find a legitimate source that said something about that. Like, I don't know, some big entertainment website. But, Natalie?
Oh, no, I was just going to ask Caitlin, do you, like... You know, obviously this is Jesse's very beginning and his most, you know, ridiculous. Like, would you like to see him back on Glee, like, for a legitimate plot reason or just to look at him or anything? Or do you think that, you know,
it would dear God, please.
Yeah.
Please, I would love it so much.
Yeah.
I want him to come back and, like, have a go. I think he's one of the only characters at this point who can just completely, tell Rachel how ridiculous she was to leave New York. Leave Broadway.
Yeah.
I need someone to rip into Rachel.
Has Jesse ever interacted on screen with Blaine?
No. Mm-mm. And I want it so much.
No, it's on my bucket list.
I know because I want it so much. Get him and Jean-Baptiste and Blaine all in one room, and it would be the greatest thing ever.
Oh, Jean-Baptiste, Mr. Roboto, I can't get enough.
Oh, my God.
I literally listen to that song so often, it just gives me chills. Such talent in those three actors, Leah and... God, Natalie's going to kill me for forgetting that guy from Pitch Perfect.
Skylar Astin.
Yes.
Sean Astin is not the same person.
Why, who's that?
Wait, the guy that's in Glee that sings Mr. Roboto is not the guy from Pitch Perfect?
Yes, it is.
Then who are you referencing just then?
Sean Astin is Samwise Gamgee in The Hobbit. In Lord of the Rings, sorry. Leah, Jonathan, and Skylar were the three leads in Spring Awakening, in the original cast of Spring Awakening. They were the three leads in the show that... you know, that Broadway show, so...
I didn't know Skylar was, too. I mean, I guess that makes sense.
He was the other male lead in that show.
And don't the leads in that show not have names? They're just kind of, like...
No, they do.
Tropes or something?
No,
maybe it's, like, the adults or something, or just called, like, teacher?
I don't know about that, but the kids all have names and identities. I don't know what you're referencing.
Okay, never mind. Apparently I'm just going to reference obscure things that no one else understands today.
Okay, but yeah, no, he was... I'm pretty sure that Skylar, just for any Spring Awakening fans, I mean, you probably know better than I do. Yeah, Leah was Wendler, the lead girl, and Jonathan was, oh, I can't remember what his name is. Anyway, they were the three lead characters, and that was one of the shows that Ryan Murphy kind of put out a call for the entire cast to audition for Glee. And, you know, he got Jenna out of that, and he got Leah, obviously, and then, yeah, that whole Spring Awakening family is still pretty tight, but Jonathan and Leah, obviously, are the closest.
Whom else are we still missing from the Spring Awakening original cast, then?
Oh, heaps. It's a large cast.
Is it,
they
yeah.
didn't have the whole thing, but yeah.
But it's only been those four?
I don't know, besides from
Jenna, Leah, Skylar, Jonathan, right? Yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, I don't think that, I don't even think that Jenna had, like, a major,
Oh, no.
Major role, if you know what I mean.
Oh, no, that's, I wanted to make a Tina joke there, but I stopped myself.
Yeah, she was one of the understudies or something in the cast, so, but they all sort of started at the same time. Anyway, enough about Spring Awakening. Bring back Jessie.
So the next plot point in this episode, I mean, we're gonna have. I'm forcing you guys to have a discussion on Will. I mean, I know you're not gonna like it, but I mean, I think we should get all Will hate out to begin with now. So everyone, just scream, "I hate you, Will!
I hate you, Will!"
We do not like
all
you.
Right, okay.
Yeah, we had a lot of negative feedback about our Will hate recently.
I had forgotten.
Okay. All right. Let it all out now so that we can have a good conversation. Let it all out now. Go.
He is so patronizing. He's like 12 million times worse than he is in the first 13. I did not think he could get worse. And I was just like, what the shit is this? Both with Emma, and with Finn as well. Like, he's just terrible and awful. And Emma, he just dismisses her like it's like, oh, your mental illness is so cute. It's not a problem. Don't worry. It's just so cute. Like, and it's just like, I want you to die. Like, I just want you to die. But seriously, he's so patronizing to like, and just so dismissive of like other people's problems.
Glee's series finale. Will dies.
Oh, I wish. And they just can't like. I didn't think he was so annoying in the first 13 that I was like, oh my God, is he like, I'd forgotten that he got worse. If you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Oh my God. It's so bad.
So what I was referencing in this episode is, you get Will and Emma who are, you know, nice, slow dancing, listening to yada yada. And then Emma says to Will that she's still a virgin. And then Will meets Joey Corcoran, and pretty much in the split second, he starts making out with her, despite the fact that he'd already started seeing someone else right as he'd broken up with getting a divorce with his ex-wife. So I just want to have, like, a kind of discussion. what do you guys think, like, his motivations actually are? Like, I know he's a horrible person, that he's done, like, this stupid stuff, but I honestly don't really know where he's coming from. Like, I don't want to think that he's just going to Shelby because he wants sex. But it's hard kind of to think that because I think he's just lost. Like, I think that Will had a lot of potential as a character at this point, but they kind of messed it up in sort of season two. Like, he had a lot of potential to explore, like... it's hard to explain. I think what Will needs as a character is sort of just be by himself for a while, not let any other people distract him from just sort of figuring himself out after his relationship with Terry. And that's even what Shelby says. But the thing is that they kind of didn't go that direction with him, which I really would have wished. Mitch, what do you think about that? Like, what do you think his motivations are right now? Like, do you think it's more than just sex? Because I think that there is more to that. Like, yeah.
To me, in a production standpoint, I think that they wanted to introduce Adina's character in a way that was central to what's going on in the show. And they saw an adult that was recently divorced and pining over anything and anyone that would give them the time of day. So they just kind of shoved them together and just said, I mean, like, Will's really just kind of like our hodgepodge character anyways. Who really cares what happens to him? And then that was it.
He's not even divorced. He's, like, getting divorced.
Oh, yeah. And she's like, are you divorced? He's like, I'm in the process. She's like, really? Even Shelby doesn't like Will.
That's the thing. I loved Shelby for that. Like, as soon as she found out that, like, his situation, she was like, ew, gross. I'm going to leave. Like, if you know what I mean. Like, I was into her because of that. Like,
yeah. I don't know.
He's just awful. And I don't know. Yeah, it does really go from like, oh, Emma won't give him sex. Oh, sexual chemistry, make out, let's hook up. And I really like Shelby calling him out. But his motivations, I don't know. The way he talked to Emma was really patronizing and bad, and I didn't like it.
Wait, where are him and Emma right now in their relationship? They're like very much dating, and they've had that Terry scene where Terry comes in and says to Emma, go check the yearbook and the like, and then they have their kind of breakup, right?
Yeah, I mean,
So it's kind of like weird territory if he's still with
Emma. No, I think it's before that. I don't know. I can't remember if it happens before. Yeah, I mean, that Terry and Emma scene was freaking tense, by the way. Like, it was like,
yeah.
Oh, it was really like, I think the Terry scene came after that makeout. I think it did.
Within the same episode?
Pardon?
Within the same episode?
Same episode. Episode
Oh my god.
You're kidding me, though. Emma and Will having the date. Emma and Will having the date with the song and they don't have sex. Then Shelby make out. Then Terry in the yearbook. Then Emma breaking up with Will.
So Will was definitely cheating on Emma.
Yeah.
That makes
it the worst.
For some reason, it's like, it's kind of like the show disassociates everything with Will and Emma at this moment. So we don't even know what Emma's going on, really, when Shelby's doing her thing with Will, because it's kind of like she's not mentioned or thought of, and there's no aside that Will should have had that could have said, like, oh, geez.
Wait, I'm dating someone else.
Yeah, yeah, and oh, wow. I really, I don't want to say, yeah, I guess I have to now. I really dislike Will more and more in retrospect. It's horrible.
I think he's emotionally stunted because he's been in the same relationship that was not a good relationship since he was, what, 15, 16? So I think he was never able to fully explore himself as an individual and in a healthy relationship. So he really has no idea what the hell he's doing.
Oh, wow, yeah,
that was
definitely
very rational of you, Caitlin.
I have my moments.
I'm impressed that amongst this you're able to do that. Yeah.
Yeah. It's the worst. It's just the worst. And I don't like the way he speaks to Phil either. I don't like the way he speaks to Finn either. It seems like he's like taking out his like own problems on Finn, kind of like that he's sort of projecting his own stuff onto Finn.
I don't really agree with that. I think that he's the way he speaks to Finn is probably better than most situations. I mean,
yeah,
I'm not saying their relationship is good because he asked Finn to be his best man in season 3. So I'm not saying their relationship is good, but I think that when he's sort of one-on-one with some students, he can be very genuine and what we should have been seeing from him as a whole. But I think the biggest travesty with Will is that he had such potential to be a great character. And I don't think that we would be saying all of our hate for Will right now if we didn't know how his character progressed in the later seasons. Like, if we didn't see Will force Sam to be the leader of the Glee Club and replace one of his best friend's shoes who had passed away and, like, make Sam cry after all that because it was so hard for him, but Will forcing him to do it, we would not be saying right now that he's a horrible character because Will really could have... Well, I don't know. I think that we could have seen Will be by himself now and figure out who himself is, focus on the Glee Club, and actually see well him improving these students' lives sort of thing, whereas instead of it just being said, I'm sort of just stumbling over my words, but yeah.
No, it's fair enough, but I mean, I was just taken aback by two things mainly. First, besides from the Shelby makeouts, etc., which was whatever. First of all, I was just shocked by how patronizing he was to Emma. Like, when he was, you know, she's like, I've got to clean up. Like, I'm like, she has severe anxiety, obviously, at the very least. And you're being like, oh, how cute. It's fine. Don't worry. I don't mind. It's like, that's not how that works. Like, that's not how that works. You are, like, it's not all about what you think. It's about her being, like, you know... quite unstable, so you have to actually, you know, accept that. And the other is that he's him basically telling Finn to, like, you know, whatever, Finn had his problems with Rachel, but, you know, we see Will being like, oh, you've got to discover your inner rock star and, you know, sleep with lots of chicks, just like, I'm going to go sleep with lots of chicks. It was like he was rationalizing his behavior with Shelby.
No, he didn't say that.
Not in those words, but he kind of did. And it was just like he was, like, projecting his behavior with Shelby. Being like, no, it's cool. And he was like, no, this is what you got to do. And it wasn't in the words. I'm not saying that he said those words, but with the impression that was given, he was encouraging Finn to do the same thing that he ended up doing, which was like, oh my God, make out with anyone that'll have me. And I was like, no. Anyway,
yeah,
not a fan. Very, very proud and impressed of Kate with Caitlin's, you know, rational analysis rather than just angry screaming. So good for you, Caitlin.
Oh, God. So that sort of concludes the main plot lines of the episode. And I just want to bring up, I don't know if you guys have seen this part of the doc, but I'm going to put you all on the spot. So the assignment of the week is hello. And I, like, oh, yeah, for you finding a new hello, having the word hello in the song title. And I really like assignments like this that are sort of not the most obvious pick, whereas, like, Guilty Pleasure or songs from movies, you know, like it was really like, you know, we're going to give the club a new hello. We'll find a song with hello in the song title. I thought it was like just kind of clever, and it was nice to see a different sort of adaptation on the themes and stuff. Is there any songs that like you guys have thought that you wanted to like, or what would be appropriate for like this sort of theme? Like for me personally, I would have loved to, or died to have heard the song Hello by the Cat Empire. I don't know if anyone knows it. Natalie, I'm not sure. You might know it.
I do, but I do. It was massive, but they wouldn't know that.
I know they never do it, but
like,
the Cat Empire is just fantastic.
Kind of like
big band sort of like.
It's really hard to describe. The closest thing I can think of that's currently kind of big is Rizzle Kicks, but they're kind of British. Oh. Again, might not have crossed the pond to America. They're like a sort of slightly wrapped, like the music is slightly rap, but with a big band kind of background. Brass and yeah,
almost Latin as well in some parts. Like
that could have worked. Honestly, Hello Goodbye is one of my favorite Beatles songs. Like, and
my least favorite Beatles song.
Really, I always really liked it. And I love the Glee version of it. So I don't know if they could have topped that for me, but. So I don't have too much else to add there.
Yeah, Caitlin, Mitch, I am putting you guys on the spot, and I actually have my own opinions for Home as well. What I wanted to hear, but do you guys have anything? Hello.
I'm looking through my iTunes and not finding a single song with the word hello in it.
Yeah, that's a good idea. I'll look at that as well.
Would it have counted to do Hello Goodbye the band?
Because
I think that's kind of clever.
Wait, what?
The band Hello Goodbye.
I don't think I've ever heard of them.
The lead singer of them hit on me in a bar in New York once.
What was this a trip that I was with you and you stepped in the puddle with Aaron Chris?
No, like 5 years before that.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
I mean, when I type in hello in my iTunes, I get a song that I didn't even know I had on here, All Time Low. I mean, I know who the band is and I used to like them, but Hello Brooklyn. Then Hello Anise by Ballpark Music. Hello Again by The Cars. Hello, I Love You, Doors, Cat Empire. Hello, Dolly.
Yeah, I was thinking of Hello, Dolly for a moment. That would have been fun.
Yeah, Hello by Oasis, which is a pretty good song.
I can only think of like one song that I listened to that has hello that they haven't done, and it's Owl City's Hello, Seattle, which is not a song. I don't know. I really don't know.
It's not really the same impression, is it? Like,
no.
Yeah.
Maybe, you know, actually, though, with what Glee kind of did with Girls Just Want to Have Fun, for instance, they could have taken Hello Seattle if it was even popular even out then. I don't know if it was. But in a hypothetical world, they could have done that in an acoustic cover, which could have been really cool. And they could have had someone... I can imagine maybe like... Oh, I don't even know. Maybe like Kurt singing on stage, kind of like when he sings the song when he comes back to McKinley. You know? And has stage props and the like. That's what I could imagine Hello Seattle song being.
I know what song you're talking about, yeah.
Okay. As if we never said goodbye.
Yeah.
From Sunset Boulevard.
Sunset Boulevard,
yeah. I don't know. Yeah, I mean, I would have loved to have heard Hello by the Cannonball. I mean, I can just imagine the whole Glee Club singing it, and I loved it.
It would have been a really cool group number if the world happened to know about that song. The only one other one I probably think is Hello by Oasis of What's the Story, Morning Glory. But I don't think Glee has ever done an Oasis song.
No, they haven't. I mean, if they were going to do an Oasis song, it'd be Wonderwall.
Bittersweet Symphony.
Yeah, that's surprising they haven't done Bittersweet Symphony. You can imagine, like, Rachel doing ballet to that, right?
No, I can imagine it like a group number, like a big group number with strings and stuff.
A cappella doing the strings.
Yeah.
Don't Stop Believing-ish, you know?
Bittersweet Symphony, that's not by Oasis, is it?
No, it's the Verb. No, sorry, Mitch, edit that bit out and I'm an idiot.
I was like, what?
No, he's right. And I'm thinking of Champagne Supernova. yeah, no. That being said, they should do Bittersweet Symphony.
I'm surprised they haven't.
But Oasis? I mean, yeah, Wonderwall. But I was thinking of Champagne Supernova, which was also massive, but probably not in America. But Wonderwall would probably be incredibly annoying.
Champagne Supernova.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can probably sing it still in my head, actually. I think it wasn't like top 40, but it was definitely like indie pop.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, okay. I don't know. I don't know many songs with hello in the title, but yeah.
Yeah.
Oh my god, wait, why didn't they do Hey Jude? That's not hello.
That's not hello.
I know. They have done Hey Jude.
The Beatles episodes.
And Hey Jude did work pretty well when they did it.
From the episode. Sorry, Mitch, I'm talking over you.
No, I was just saying that, you know, obviously, eventually when Blaine sings Hey Jude and the group does to Tina on prom night when she's slushied from Carrie.
Yeah.
No? You like that too?
That's one of my favorite songs. They had so much potential for that song. It was fine. Like, you know.
The song was fine. The moment was dumb, but yeah.
I think, I do think in general that whenever Darren gets a chance to sing anything Beatles-esque or Beatles-era, it comes out really well. He does have, obviously, a really good rock range, but I think he really shines in those kind of slow build, somewhat falsetto, but not quite, you know, Freddie Mercury kind of style, right?
Yeah, well, I'll tell you why.
One of the worst play songs ever.
Don't Stop Me Now was a bit weird, but if we're talking about a rock voice, yeah, it's a little bit of a problem that they have, actually. You know, just obviously we're jumping ahead because Blaine hasn't even come into the show yet, but because the character of Blaine, his personality and everything like that is the kind of the character that's going to do the, you know, the Katy Perry, the kind of female pop song versions, you know, that kind of thing, sweetness. But his natural voice is not that great on those kind of songs, and his natural voice is more of a, you know, it's not a Broadway voice, and it's not really a pop voice. It is, like, his most powerful form of projecting is a rock, like a rock growl, as opposed to, like, an actual Broadway, like, belt, which I've said on the show before. And
well, how was he in How to Succeed, then?
How to Succeed is a patter show. The singing is a lot of, like, sort of words spoken to a tune as opposed to actually belting out a song.
Frank Sinatra.
Even Darren sort of said that himself. He's like, the reason I was able to do this show is because it's not a traditional Broadway sung show.
Well, Natalie, then how can we explain, you know, his Star Kid beginnings where he was singing acoustic Broadway songs?
They're not Broadway songs. They're pop songs. They're not Broadway songs. And he doesn't sound that great in the first musical. Like, he sounds fine, but not that great. It's very cheap quality, if you know what I mean. Like, his voice sounds nice, but even, like, this is so not a conversation we need to be having right now, but, like, even the way he projects in, like, Not Alone, it's a growl. It's like when he's, like, baby on Alone. It is. If you go and listen to it, it's done with a rock voice. It's not done with a Broadway voice. So, yeah. And that doesn't necessarily suit the character of Blaine. And he does well enough on the pop songs, but he will do better on the songs that don't necessarily suit the character, which sort of sucks. But anyway, Blaine isn't even in the show yet, so let's carry on.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, this sort of leads into a discussion about like this, because we haven't really spoken about the actual songs that were in the episode yet. Yeah. I've got a lot of opinions on a few of them. I mean, Hello, I Love You by The Doors. I mean, I'm a huge Doors fan. Like, my God, I love The Doors. And Finn did all right, no? Like, I mean, Corey's got that really raspy sort of, like, he can sort of, you know, this is the type of music he really could be singing more of. And he did. Like, I like how they handle Finn's voice, like, later on. Gives You Hell. Okay, Gives You Hell was, I think, probably the first Glee song I had ever heard. I think, like, I didn't really get into Glee much until season one had sort of ended, and then I sort of picked it up. Like, my Glee story is confusing. I couldn't remember myself. But yeah. I remember I watched this, because I remember they had put out a preview on iTunes of just, like, this scene of Gives You Hell, and, like, I think sort of in promotional, like, stuff to get ready for the back nine. And I watched this probably 100 times. I can quote Rachel and Will. I know all the movements. I know exactly when Rachel points the mic and brings him down to dance. I know when she's on the chairs and pointing
her
fingers.
That dance is so awkward. I really don't like Mike's dance there.
I know it back to front. No, it was amazing.
Mike's dance does not show off his I'm trying to remember if there's another moment where I can really see a standout Mike dance moment, and I don't know.
Oh, man, there's
one?
Haves. Cool. From West Side Story.
No, not yet. I'm saying, like, up until
oh,
now.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that's only because he's not even a character yet. Like,
yeah.
He's only had a few lines.
I don't think he's had a line. Like, poor Mike Chang.
Oh, he's had a few.
Poor Mike Chang,
poor
Tina.
But, like, he's always just had subtle dance moves.
Mm. Yeah, well, I mean, to me, it wasn't as much as, like, well, I guess there was single ladies. Wait, but, when, like, Britney's group dancing has always obviously been, like we've always all said, that it was kind of stands out because she's like the poppiest with her moves, and she's the most professional looking out of all of the group that are already pretty good dancers. So yeah, it's funny that I don't really see it's weird, because there are moments where I really do like Mike's dancing and moments like this where I don't whatsoever. And perhaps this wasn't the best song to showcase anything whatsoever of Mike Chang, the character, because
it was fun.
It was cute. Yeah. But I think
was,
I had really high expectations.
It wasn't meant to highlight. It wasn't meant to highlight him. Like, yeah. I mean,
they were just,
I think,
joining in. It wasn't like meant. It was an impromptu session. Yeah. It wasn't like he was showing off his best move.
And I know that's coming from my retrospective once again, that I know that he's like one of the dance idols of the show, right? As opposed to just this extra guy who Rachel pulls out for fun.
I don't know. I think it was fun enough.
Yeah, no, it was. Yeah, I think it was fine.
Well, I do think that there's an important note to be made about the fact that Lea Michele can really change her vocals from like a pop Broadway to like pop rock effectively, to where she picks up the style of the original singer very well.
It's not really.
Oh man.
It's the tune, but it's not the style. Like,
I think she does pick up the like minor vocal like fluctuancies, like where, for instance, I know like she does a really good Katy Perry cover where she can sing like Firework, and it sounds to me like she's doing the same kind of cracks and pops that Katy would, and I thought that was the same with this song.
I mean, singing the same tune doesn't make it like the same style though. Like, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, and pop and Katy, like, there's only so much you can do a pop song like Firework by Katy Perry. Like, that's pretty karaoke, whereas like, I mean, All American Rejects can be as well, but I think this particular song, like, it's more like a pop punk sort of song, whereas and that can rely solely on like the vocals that are in the music, whereas the vocals in this version of the Glee version, Lea Michele sort of made it just solely pop, I'd say. I think
that's just my opinion. The background music as well sounded a little bit like, I didn't hate it because I quite like the song in general. But it was one of their more, like, kids bop versions, if you know what I mean. Because, like, even the background music, they didn't do music as heavy as the actual music of the song is. Usually they replicate the background music of whatever the original is pretty well, if you know what I mean. And it's just a different person singing. But for this, they kind of just had the piano and the light drums as opposed to the actual rock background of the song. Also, every time I see it, I can't help automatically changing the lyrics, because on the radio edit version, that line is like, you know, where's your picket fence, love, where's your shiny car. Yeah, when they do it live, he says, where's your picket fence, bitch, where's your shiny car. And so I just like to imagine Lea Michele singing, where's your picket fence, bitch, to Finn. So yeah, That's my main.
And that's kind of funny that they changed the lyrics in that way, because they said bitch in like every second sentence in this in this show. But it's the fact of
selling the single, and Glee is still very new, and they probably expected this to be the top seller.
The songs in
the show and all that. So,
well, I mean, even All American Rejects, their radio version says love, not bitch. They don't. Anyway, doesn't matter. But yeah, I just always...
Yeah.
Well, it's also probably a good point to make that Glee probably wanted to follow what most people would already know. If anything.
Yeah, I'm not saying it's an objection. I'm just saying I just always think it.
Yeah, no, I was just seeing where their perspective was to...
Well, I mean, I don't think Glee is going to, like, randomly copy the live version of, like, a rock song, like, to its, like, most obscure, you know...
although they will take a YouTuber's cover of whatever that was. That one time. That was a mess.
Baby Got Back, yeah.
Yeah, Baby Got Back.
Okay, anyway. The next song was Hello by Lionel Richie, and that was a duet of Rachel and Jesse. Do you guys have any opinions? I mean, it was pretty funny them just busting out in the library, but
freaking cheese fest.
Music store, bookstore, whatever.
Yeah. Caitlin? Caitlin.
I just love it right before the song when Jesse's like, I frequently give impromptu concerts to homeless people. Like, oh, it's more him being ridiculous, yeah. And I love it.
And that's when he tells Rachel, he's like, your rendition of Barbara was flawed. And it's like, but you're very talented. Like, that's so funny to me all the time. That's Barney Stinson.
That's the thing, like, all of him acting like that, it doesn't seem like he's trying to be condescending, if you know what I mean. It's just like he thinks that this is how you talk to people, and
like Santana.
It's just incredible, if you know what I mean. Like, I just love it. Like, it's so terrible, but I love him.
Kind of while we're still on that note about your performance of Barbara was flawed, whatever, I think that's another important thing to note, that song itself, Don't Rain on My Parade, saw a brand new light in Lea Michele's vocals, because I remember, like, seeing that not only, of course, all around, like, on iTunes and Tumblr and the like, but just kind of, like, everywhere I turned the internet, I would just see people, like, talking about that song or that rendition or something. And to me, it's like it almost made it another Don't Stop Believing. Like, you know, the new version was gaining larger popularity than the original even tried to have. But then again, this is, like, you know, a big Broadway classic, so I suppose it's not hard to find, you know, famous roots in it already that are easy to kind of jump on the bandwagon of.
Yeah, I suppose so. Yeah.
Sorry, Jack, go on.
Oh, no, you go. I was going to go into the next song, but you get carry on.
This song I loved. Like, it was ridiculous and cheesy, but the vocals and the performance were amazing. Like, they were really good, despite how ridiculous it was. Again, that's like Lea and Jonathan having like 5 years experience singing live together, if you know what I mean. So obviously they were so in tune with each other, and they acted so well to each other. And I loved watching it. It was so hilarious.
Did you guys sing along with the harmony of it too?
Quality. No, I don't sing along to Glee.
Oh, I should have known.
Why would I sing?
Well, when I'm rewatching an episode, I'm just like, okay, I've listened to this like 50 times. I didn't entertain myself at this point.
Anyway, no, I didn't sing along to the harmonies, but they were so good together. They're so good together, and they're just perfect and ridiculous, and their ridiculousness makes them more perfect, so yeah. Anyway.
Yeah. So the next song is Highway to Hell by AC/DC, and oh man, this song, I'm a big fan of AC/DC. They're a very big rock band around the world, but they're from Australia. Highway to Hell is just a kick-ass song. It's my favorite AC/DC song. And Jonathan, I really don't mind the Glee version. I mean, I know a lot of covers by this song, especially there's a little small band called the Bell Rays. They do a great cover of Highway to Hell. But, yeah, so that was sort of was just there. And then we had Hello Goodbye by the Beatles, which, I mean, I said, yeah, it's not like I hate the song. It's just my least favorite Beatles song. I just find the lyrics to be kind of cheesy, but... That's just me.
A lot of Beatles songs have stupid lyrics. It's fine.
Oh, I know. Worry. Oh, I know, yeah.
Does anyone else know that song as the Target song?
No.
Maybe it was only in the States. Maybe it's only in the States. Yes. You guys don't have Target there, right?
We have Target.
Yeah.
Oh, well, there's no saying that because you guys acted like you'd never heard of it when I said it, I guess. I don't know.
That song was not used to advertise Target.
It was the Target song. For like a year and a half in America, and this is like right at the height of its advertisement, and that's where I thought they chose the song.
Oh, no. Aww. This is a very big Beatles
this
song.
This is a massively famous song. But no, no, I don't know that. What do we have the advertisers target here, Jack? It used to be Counts
Defeat. It changes, like, every time.
Wasn't it The Who, like, or something like that for a while, and they were in the ad?
I think they had I Love It by Icona Pop at one point.
Oh, I don't know. Anyway, they change it all the time. But yeah.
Oh, it changes, like, every, yeah.
We definitely have Target, don't worry. But no, not this song. And, I don't know. It is a very big song, and I assume they chose it because it has Hello in the title, like the rest of the songs in the episode. I like this song. It's not, like, my favourite Beatles song, but I do like it. And the Glee version I really liked. I don't know if it was just, like, the acting, like, you know, the overdramatic acting between Finn and Rachel while doing the song, the, like, gang vocals of the group, but I always really liked the sound of this one.
Isn't Mercedes Park and Bark in the end?
I can't remember.
No. I think... No.
I hate that terminology. I hate it so much.
I thought it was funny.
I hate it. Sorry. Yeah. Anyway.
I wish that there was, like, a compilation of all the Park and Barks in one video, because you know there's always, like, 5 seconds from every song of Glee. Like, that'd be really cool if someone just put together, like, all of Mercedes' runs.
That'd be funny. I'd watch that.
Yeah, that'd be fun.
No!
like, her one in Mattress is so intense.
The one in Mattress is in Jump. That's just, yeah. It's very auto-tuned. Like, it's almost like you're pressing a key on a piano
She goes up,
in
like,
Jump,
12 octaves.
I bet Halen, when she, like, oh, man, yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Anyway.
Like, I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Okay, so to sort of cap off this episode, does anybody have any favorite moments or quotes? I mean, I've got a few, but Caitlin, we'll go to you first. Do you have anything that you wanted to say about this episode?
Can I just say that I have a far greater appreciation for Emma on rewatch than I did the first time around?
Oh my god, same. I'm like, she's a badass, and Will is oppressing her.
She keeps sticking up for herself far more than I remember, and every time she does it, I'm like, go! And I'm like, yeah. So I appreciate her so much more this time around, so I'm going, just... Emma appreciation life.
Mm.
Yeah. Natalie or Mish, yeah, any big moments?
Oh, yeah. My big one, my quote, which I'd forgotten was in this episode, and it stuck with me for so long, was like at the beginning when Will is like, how do you answer the phone? And they're like, hey, what up? And Kurt's like, no, she's dead. This is her son. Yeah. It shouldn't be funny. I mean, it's also sad. But it's so funny. And I like Kurt so much better when he's, like, just in the background being scathing of things. Like, like not to say that he doesn't deserve his own plot, but when he gets it, I don't much like what he turns into. But, like, in this, just his kind of, ugh. And, like, later on in when they're doing Gives You Hell and, you know, Rachel tries to engage him. but my other... kind of favorite moment, I guess, was the interaction between Terry and Emma. Not that it was nice, it was horrible and tense, but like Terry seemed to know a lot about Emma, if you know what I mean. And I know that Terry's a creepy stalker and she probably did research, but I want to know like Terry and Emma backstory. I mean, we know they didn't go to the same school or anything because, you know, Emma wasn't at that school. She didn't know that thing about the yearbook or whatever, like, you know, it's not like they're all from the same graduating class, which would be weird if they were, but like I want to know some Terry and Emma backstory because that scene was like tense and weird.
I think it was just all derived from the events of like the first 13.
Yeah, probably, but I still want to know.
Yeah. Mitchell, any big funny moments or big moments? Yeah
I really liked the production of Highway to Hell. It was really professional.
Oh, it was awesome.
It cracks me up when Shelby's like, that was horrible. Wake up. Jesse, show us a real smile. He's like,
oh, but the show face was great as well because that moment, sorry to interrupt, I forgot how much I liked Jesse in that moment. Like, he's, you know, that he's participating as a student, if you know what I mean. He's not actually, No, I've got this idea built up in my head as Jesse as this really, like, you know, all powerful being or something. But, like, he was, you know, he's just a kid participating in the group in the same way that all of the others are. And he doesn't seem to be, like, lording it over the other people in the group. And I liked seeing him, like, in rehearsal as part of his glee club. I enjoyed that.
Yeah, totally.
No, my favorite moments in this episode are kind of just more funnier things, like when Sue's cutting off the hair. I think it might have been like a Jewish or something, and then just she gives the hair to a, yeah, and then she gives the hair to the Cheerio, and then she just doesn't know what to do with it. She kind of just walks away holding the hair. It's so funny to me. And then just a few funny quotes, like
Jack, kind of, pretty going from that. If Neckbrace Cheerio was around, that'd been a perfect moment for her to come by and just be like. Sue would just be like, take this, neck brace.
Yeah. And like Emma says that it was like a pearly white harbor attack. That was like, an example of Glee's ability to be offensive but kind of like funny at the same time.
Jesus.
oh my god, yeah. I that's probably it, I'd say. Yeah. Yeah. So that it caps off Hello, Mitch, Home.
Yeah, absolutely.
Do we have a here's what you missed on Glee?
Very, very quickly, in between this episode and the next, was the episode of Power of Madonna, which was their first fully themed episode, which was kind of a shame to skip over because the music in this one, at least in my opinion, was gorgeous. Like, every song was amazing. I love Like a Prayer at the end.
Prayer's my favorite, yeah.
Oh, it's so good. But 4 minutes, basically the plot, you know, is... Because there's a lot of stuff that happens in that episode that's set up for this episode. Kurt and Mercedes get recruited to the Cheerios as singers because another attempt to break up the Glee Club. And so they do, like, vocal numbers for the Cheerios, which, whatever, that's a thing. Finn and Santana and Jesse and Rachel and Will and Emma all try to have sex and they do Like a Virgin.
Not with each other. Like
not as a group. In separate pairings.
And Finn gets Santana a cheeseburger.
But yeah, so that's, you know, that all happens and those sort of, you know, Rachel and Finn are definitely broken up. Jesse transfers to McKinley so that he can be with Rachel without it being, competition. And so they're openly together, which is cute, even though it has a sinister ending. I just want to enjoy it being cute right now. And anything else significant that ties over in that episode?
Well, just in general, it was important to see Sue do her first musical number in Vogue.
Yeah, that's true. There was the Vogue number by Sue. Yeah.
It shows that she has, like, Sue has, like, a weird love for the arts, but she doesn't, like, Will. So it's like she can't like the arts that are at McKinley, you know?
Yeah, the Power of Madonna episode overall was really, really good, actually. So, yeah. Sorry, Jack, what was that?
So, you know, the episode was good, but what really pisses me off is that the Sue's plot is the fact that she burnt all of her hair off using, like, drugs or chemicals around the house. Like, that's fine. Like, that's whatever on itself. But what I absolutely hate is that it's such a tiny thing that gets me all the time is when in season 5, there's the plot of Sue wanting to be, like, more feminine to get with the school board guy or whatever. And in a flashback, you see her with really long hair, and you see her cutting her hair off to become more masculine and be more intimidating. It's only the tiniest thing, but it pisses me right off.
Oh, I always remember that moment.
Jack, they would never remember that they gave Sue a reason for having short hair. Like, never. Never. What do you expect from this show?
Shits me off. And especially because I remember in that scene they had Take On Me by the band Aha, like the classic 80s song. And I've always wanted the Glee Club to perform that at a like big performance, but whatever.
Yeah.
Whatever.
That's a Blaine song.
We can just learn.
Well, you recognize the song, Mitch.
No, I said it. That's a Blaine song if I've ever heard it. I can imagine doing that one. No, I've definitely heard it. Oh, yeah. No, I love that song.
Yeah, no, I'm trying to think if I can imagine Blaine. Good group number, but yeah, Blaine, potentially. What was I going to say? That's something we can make a note of if we ever write television shows. We hire a continuity, you know, editor who, you know, their job is to watch every episode and make notes of any character development in that character's file. So if they ever put, you know, they have Sue's hair short because this, if you know what I mean. And then later in the future, they can, you know, just have a file that they can cross-reference.
It would make sense if they had, you know, literally, if they had, like... A Word document or a Google Doc of just, like, all of the characters and all of the things that built up to what they are. So that whenever there's, like, a plot point coming up that they want to write about, they can just do, like, a quick search function. And,
yeah, like, you know,
in Sue's file be hair. They'd be like, great, yeah, Bleach, you know, got it, we're done.
Or just give me a call, I'll remember.
Yeah, seriously. Like, Jack should be the Bleach, the Glee continuity editor.
Am I delusional? Like, is this not something shows should have? They should have, like, files on each character, notes about each character that they, like...
Yeah.
And it should be updated after every episode? Like, is that not a thing?
Natalie, I can imagine literally that if you and I and Jack and Caitlin were running a legitimate TV show, like, we would be so damn organized about the way we were running it. And we would definitely be like, I can imagine the arguments we would have over, like, well, did that actually matter that our hair, like, it would be intense. There would be blood.
No, I saw a Tumblr post the other day. I don't think it was a gift set. It was just like a photo set. And it had the production rooms of each of a variety of different shows. I think there was Community was on there.
How Met Your Mother.
And there was just like boards and strings, like styles from Teen Wolf connections up everywhere. And then the last one, I mean, this is all biased, like, to cause a joke, but then the last one was the Glee one. Room was bare and they were doing like handstands and like they were like dancing on the tables and there was just like the Glee writers room.
Scripts shredded in the trash and like
computers crashed. We shouldn't be getting angry.
Yeah. So
yeah. Okay. All right.
Well, let's get into home while we're done.
Yeah. Sorry. Go ahead. Let's power through this one.
Continuity. Absolutely. So, yeah. Glee episode 116. Home is really important to me, and you'll find out why in our recap. In this episode, Kurt takes his crush for Finn to a whole new level by hooking up Bert and Carol, the beginning of that continuity. Actually does cover, for once. However, Kurt gets jealous when he sees Finn and Bert bonding over man talk. Meanwhile, Finn fights to keep his mom from selling all the stuff that Finn associates with his father. Finn finally allows Bert to sit in his next to his dad's ashes at a very special armchair / picture of Finn and his deceased father. Sue is being interviewed for a cover story on her coaching from a high-profile journalist. Meanwhile, Kurt and Mercedes in particular are told that they need to lose weight in order to fit into a proper Cheerios uniform for Mercedes that is the gender-specific one, because I think she's wearing the male one right now, not comfortable enough wearing a skirt. After passing out from low blood sugar and starving herself and the like, Mercedes receives a really inspirational talk from Quinn at the assembly for the cover story in the end of the episode. Mercedes shocks Sue and the entire school by performing Christina Aguilera's Beautiful. April Rhodes comes back into play, guest starring Kristen Chenoweth, this time owning a roller derby rink from a dying Playboy millionaire. She spends the night at Will's, sparking a bit of the romance that they once had. At the end, her Playboy dies, leaving her a $2 million inheritance. April buys out the auditorium for the Glee Club and goes off to create the first ever all-white Broadway production of The Wiz. Yeah, so there was a lot of, like, not... I suppose the plot lines didn't seem that they fit together. They were good, but they just... I don't see how Mercedes wanting to feel comfortable in her body fits with home, maybe comfortability or something, but...
At home in her own body.
Yeah, I mean, but those two plot lines do seem to clash, because it's like...
Also, not every plot line in an episode. I'm happy with the episode being named after one major plot line, and it can have another plot line that isn't necessarily also named after the episode, if you know what I mean. I'm quite okay with that.
Well, that's all right. Go ahead, Jack.
I was going to say, I do agree with that, like, Natalie. But I think in this particular episode, like, they were trying so hard to mash the Finn and Kurt storyline with the Will and April one. They were trying so hard to push them together and show, home, you need a new home, yada, yada, yada. And then that kind of felt too forced. So I think maybe that could be why you're feeling, Mitch, that the Mercedes plotline was a bit forced. Mm. Yeah.
That's a good point, but I mean, as forced as it may have been, like I was referencing, there's a really amazing scene between Mercedes and Quinn where Quinn is just like, I used to not feel comfortable in my body in the same ways, and I used to starve myself from drinking these bulimic shakes and not eating after, and she's like, I'm eating for two, and I'm caring more for myself because I have to for another person, but you need to take care of yourself, Mercedes. And that moment was so sweet to me. I completely forgot that Quinn had such a really amazing heart-to-heart with a character I didn't remember her having too much interaction with ever. So, Jack, did you find this moment touching, or were you not too big on Quinn kind of butting her nose into Mercedes' business?
No, I love Mercedes and Quinn's dynamic. I mean, I've got a lot of disappointments with Klee, but it's one of the things I would have loved to have seen carry out properly throughout the rest of these seasons. And I mean, rewatching this, I mean, I can't get over how much I'm really liking Mercedes. Like, I used to hate her so much, but I don't know what's happened since season 5, but I really, really liked Mercedes' plotline. And I think that, it's really interesting to me how the Glee has handled body weight issues, because they really have done it, like, kind of well, like, compared to some of the other stuff they've touched on. Like, they had a good point with Quinn realizing that, like, she was going to sacrifice her own body before she was pregnant, and now she's realizing that she has to take care of some of her baby, like, of somebody else, that she is willing to eat properly for both of them. And I liked how she was able to impart that sort of, like, I guess newfound wisdom onto Mercedes. And then even when you skip into, like, season 4 with Marley and Kitty, that even that plot line was handled relatively well in terms of Marley's recovery, in a way that, like, they actually did show her needing money to get better and go see someone about, like, the issues she was having, even though it was despite Kitty's craziness and the Glee Club sort of mocking Marley for passing out at sectionals. But other than that, it was kind of handled all kind of okay, so yeah.
Yeah, well, Jack, it's really interesting that you bring up that Marley point, because I want to come back and ask Caitlin in particular about her feelings on this moment in just a second. But I wanted to raise a question to, let's go with you, Natalie, if you thought that perhaps Kitty got her idea for making Marley bulimic from Sue's bulimic shakes.
I don't know. I don't think that Kitty would have even been at school at this point, would have she?
Well, she's still continuing to do the shakes, is my assumption.
Is she, though? I mean, after she found out that journalist was so, like, close to, like, screwing her over, do you think that would have actually continued?
I don't know.
So, as long as Sue's getting the good article and she knows that they're never going to come back, she'll continue doing her.
I can imagine her continuing to do this. And it's kind of, there are a lot of ridiculous things that the Cheerios do and will do throughout the rest of the show that aren't exactly mentioned again. But, you know, like, it kind of reminds me, I suppose, of, like, when we've seen Vocal Adrenaline cast members running out of the auditorium throwing up because they're so intense and they haven't slept for hours and hours, and like that kind of stuff just seems like the kind of banter that Glee throws out just for fun, yeah, to the humor. But then it is such a serious plot line that it isn't, because like Santana and Brittany just so simply chug them down and like whatever, like in tandem in the lunchroom, and then Mercedes, you know, is I suppose some sort of hospitalized because of that. So it's like, how are you supposed to interpret a joke like that, you know?
I don't think the Kitty thing was necessarily related. I mean, I think she probably didn't even need that as her inspiration, if you know what I mean. But yeah.
Okay, so Caitlin, yes, I'd love to know if you saw anything redeeming in Quinn, whom we all know by now you do not have a strong liking for.
I mean, I like Quinn at this part of the series. This is the only part of the series where I do like her. So liked her a lot in this scene.
All right. Well, that's good. Well, I couldn't remember exactly when and where you didn't like Quinn, but I knew it was at one point. So I'm glad to see that she's still in your good graces, because I would be very upset if she wasn't.
Quinn was good.
The Quinn and Mercedes, I think, friendship that, you know, sort of continued to the end of season one is something completely underplayed. I wish that they'd continued that relationship, you know, further through the show, if you know what I mean, because they did remain very close in season one, and then by the end of it was like, oh, they used to talk. Like, okay, like, and they would have been a really good friendship in the same way that sort of Santana and Rachel are close now or whatever. Like, it would have been good to have Quinn and Mercedes a bit, but...
Yeah, they're very, like, salt and pepper. They don't really seem like... And that actually wasn't even meant to be in a reference to the races whatsoever, as it made it come off. I'm referencing just, like, oil and vinegar, or, like, just things that don't mix.
Oh, my God, Mitch.
No, I had to cover ground there.
You're going to get destroyed.
No, I legitimately did not mean it that way, I promise.
That's hilarious.
Because that, quite frankly, does not matter one bit at all. But regardless, I'm just referencing their personalities, because Mercedes is a lot more brassier than Quinn's kind of, like, sneaky bitchiness. So it's interesting when they're together to me, because I don't see them having too much in common, but they do in this particular moment, this scene. I think that was smart of the Glee writers to decide that they could take a character who used to be a Cheerio and teach one that is just starting and make that two important characters to us already. So kudos to the Glee writers. I thought that was one of the best moments of the episode. Well, starting on why this was such an important episode to me, but perhaps
if it wasn't highly offensive, I wish we could name this title of the episode Salt and Pepper. But
please don't. Please don't.
We can't, but it's just, oh, you crack me up.
Yeah.
All right. So one of the most important songs in Glee for myself personally is April's A House Is Not a Home and One Less Bell to Answer. I suppose not in that order, because A House Is Not a Home is a reprise of a song that we're going to get to that Kurt sings to Finn. I thought that this was very unique in Glee, and it made me feel like I was witnessing like a stage production in a certain facet, because it was referencing itself in a way that was more of the thought process than the actual plot. Because, I mean, April wasn't there to see Kurt sing that song, but it was kind of like, in a way, they made that theme of home run in one of the most unique ways that I'd seen in television, because they were able to do it through song in ways that not another show had really done before. And that really defined Glee as being a very sophisticated musical show that was going to sometimes take the leaps and bounds that Broadway shows do to introduce really complicated harmony and reprises and a Broadway actress singing such. And I thought it was just so phenomenal. And I can't even tell you how many times I have woken up to listen to the car, fallen asleep to that song. It is beyond my favorite of all Glee songs to this day still. So then, Caitlin, do you have anything in particular that you liked about, not that scene, but that song of House Is Not a Home and One Last Bell to Answer between Will and April?
Oh, the Will and April scene. I was like, which one is this? They all blended together. That scene would not end. I kept looking at the clock being like, why is this scene not over? Oh my God, it just keeps going. It was so long.
Preach, I usually would always just fast forward this number because it just goes so long. And I think I remember hearing a while ago, I remember hearing, I think there was meant to be like a Kurt and Mercedes number of Fergalicious in this episode. I don't know how valid that is, but it might not have been this one, but I think I'm pretty sure that there was a season one, song that was cut.
Cut because of this.
Because of this bloody scene. Oh man, it's just crowd annoys me.
The production value is good, but it is boring and pointless. It's not interesting to me at all. And I don't care about the plot behind it, so I don't care about the emotion. It's very cleverly done in an objective production value way that Glee did not continue to use. It didn't continue to do those reprises and like Broadway theatrical style staging. So it just seems weird on its own. But the song, I don't think I've ever listened to it on purpose.
Oh, that's so funny. No,
I mean,
everyone else is like, you're saying.
No, Miss.
I respect it. It's okay. I'm not like offended that. No one else likes it.
Well, no, but like what you were saying, like it is very, very, I really did like how they did do the reprise, but, and with what you're saying, yeah, it is very nice that they did the reprise immediately after you saw Kurt. But the only problem for me is that, oh yeah, the song was too long, but another problem is that because I felt like the plots were so trying so hard to mash them together, and for some reason the theme in this one just sort of fell a bit more flat to me. I mean, I like the Finn stuff a bit better, especially like with same with Carol at the end. But I think for me it would have worked a little better if I cared a lot more about what was actually happening rather than I wanted to, because the subject matter in this episode was actually really, really heavy. Like it seemed to come across really intense, and it had all the ingredients there for me to cry over the episode, but I just didn't, you know, so I don't know.
Yeah, I don't
think it's
know,
fair enough that no one else cared about Will and April, because I don't know that I myself really cared about Will and April. It was it was more of like an answer to my searching for a Broadway production on a television series, which I eventually found in Smash more than Glee. Sometimes in Glee, but obviously more often in Smash. So it's not like I was completely bereft in my life of a Broadway experience on the small screen.
Yeah. Well, Mitch, I know you're a big fan of April Rhodes, and I am musically. Yeah. I really do like when her and Will sing together. Like, Fire by Springsteen is just a great song. But
they have really good mix.
Really good, objectively pointless, totally pointless for the show, but
yes.
Great, like sounded yes. Great.
Yeah. Yes, and even Alone, when they sing the song Alone by Heart. And,
I love
and
that.
And Caitlin, I know that you really don't like the reprise of Raise Your Glass in season 5, but I love that version.
Okay, guys, I think, Jack, I would like that song more. This is really weird. If Will sang with her more, because I like their voices that much. This
Will's
is probably the only
voice.
Positive thing I'm ever going to say about Will, but he does mix very, very, very well with Kristen Chenoweth. It's something about his... Yeah. I think he has just the right amount of falsetto for her, like, operatic soprano that it's, like, finally someone, like a male lead to match her, because I never quite thought that any Fiero ever met her in Wicked, and I really am very impressed with this chemistry, and it's like it's not enough to make me ship them, don't get me wrong, but it's enough to make me wish that they could just sing more songs together, I suppose. It's like a weird mix that I never would have guessed. It's kind of akin, once again, what we were referencing with Mercedes and Quinn being Oil and Vinegar, and Will and April aren't exactly that, but it just they're characters I would never really expect to sound as good as they do together, I suppose. But Jack?
Well, I don't think anybody would dispute you that, like, of Matthew Morrison's voice. Like, he's got a great voice. Like, that's without a doubt. And I mean, I think people would be able to sort of put aside their Will hate and appreciate the harmonies that he and Kristen Chenoweth has. Yeah.
Yeah, I think it sounded good, but yeah, just, I don't know.
Well, then let's talk.
It did go on for a question. Really long time.
Yeah.
I have a question about this scene as well. Like, was April actually trying to hook up with Will?
I don't know.
I found myself getting kind of confused.
I don't think so, honestly. I really don't.
No, and isn't this moment referenced later on with Sue saying that she spotted them, like, via a telescope or something like...
No, Sue bugged Will's apartment.
What? Why?
She does. Oh, we'll find it out. We'll see again in later episodes. It's when, like, she's trying to get Emma to, like, go against Will, and then it's just like, I bugged your apartment, I know you've had Idina Menzel, or Chevy Corcoran, and April Rhodes over.
And isn't it funny that we have the introduction of, you know, obviously Idina Menzel, and then the return of Kristen Chenoweth, but they're still not in the same episode, and it makes me wonder if there's any credence to the they hated each other during the Wicked run business, because it seems weird that you would have, I mean, maybe it would just break this universe a little bit too much to not only sing Defying Gravity, but, you know, then have the two stars of Wicked in the same episode and not be their characters. I don't know, it's just...
I don't know. The characters just aren't even, like, they've got no point being in the same scene, so I'm, you know.
Yeah, and I don't really like it when people attach, like, one character to, like, an actor in other roles, if you know what I mean. Like, all of those hilarious posts on Tumblr, you know, going around being like, lol, Wolverine chasing the gladiator across France, you know, in reference to, like, Les Mis or whatever. I'm like, no.
What?
The actors who play different characters in different movies and roles, and you don't have to be like, oh my god, lol, he played one character. Isn't it so funny that he's playing another character? Like, if you know what I mean? I just don't find that funny at all. Like, and, like, people do it with the Game of Thrones cast a lot of times. Like, oh my god, Game of Thrones people looking normal. They're actors. They just play on a
Dan Radcliffe show. Will never, ever, ever escape his Harry Potter mantra, no matter
like,
how
like, oh my
much
god, so
to.
Funny that Harry Potter is doing this. And I'm like, okay,
Harry
I get
Potter,
it,
dude,
but...
on stage. Oh!
I'm like, okay, all right. Yeah. And so I don't find that funny at all. So, So I would have found it, like, a bit weird if they'd put them together, if you know what I mean, and be like, lol, 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 oh my god, wicked people, if you know what I mean, like, in the same episode. Yeah. I think it sells sort of more credit to them to just be separate appearances.
Well, it makes me wonder...
Yeah, I agree.
...then if this wasn't just planned because... to bring on these actors because they were writing off the coattails of Wicked, but for that exact matter, Natalie, that they didn't want to bring them in on purpose because they didn't want that. Lol, lol,
it would have been tacky and weird. I don't know. I don't think it would have worked.
Mm-mm. Yeah, me neither.
Yeah, I agree.
They signed on at different times. Like, Kristen signed on before the show was airing, if you know what I mean. She heard about it and signed on because she was in the first 13. Whereas Idina didn't sign on until after she saw the show or you know, at a different point in the show. So it wouldn't have made sense anyway. But anyway, carry on.
So I like April a lot. I really like her ditziness. I like her jokes. I like her major drunken flaw. I think it all kind of comes together into this cute, bubbly Kristen Chenoweth package. As Caitlin knows from when we were doing Rewatchable, she was a main actress on Pushing Daisies. Mm-hmm. She was the saving grace of that show, by far. And I didn't even know she was in Pushing Daisies when I started it, and it was probably like the only thing that kept me going. And it's just I know it's a lot of her charisma that brings me into April, because she has a nice quick wit, April and Kristen, I suppose, that it really it's like the only type of humor that I get, because I'm very, like, I think Jack would know by now that I just don't like comedy movies, but like Kristen Chenoweth is one of the only actors that can make me laugh, period. It's weird. I don't know what it is, but she has like this...
I'm sure there's somebody else that makes...
It's so hard to get me in another. I don't know what it is. I think I'm just so cold-hearted when it comes to comedy. I have so much trouble laughing at anyone but Kristen Chenoweth. I don't know where it came so exclusive to her, but I think I just like her mix, her stand-up, I suppose. I think it's funny, so... That doesn't really lead into me, like we were referencing before, liking Will and April. I don't think it's a healthy relationship, and I don't think that they should ever interact ever again. But I don't know who else you'd bring back in April, so... I mean, because she's quite literally poison on him. She drags him down in ways that he already isn't, so it's kind of funny that he has new depths to reach, but he does. Does anyone at one moment, at one scene, whether it's the roller derby or whether it's sleeping in the same bed together or whether it's the finale scene, does anyone ever ship Will and April in this episode, Caitlin?
I don't ship Will with anything ever, so no.
I don't even think we're meant to. I don't think we're meant to ship them anyway. Like, the show really could like have built up a big romantic like deal with these two, and they never did, which I kind of appreciated, because they're not suited for each other at all. Actually, I don't know. Actually, they're probably. I guess that maybe they probably could have had a relationship, but yeah, I don't know.
Did Fandom
if Will
give them...
sleeps with every single adult female he encounters, then you know.
Yeah, well, that's kind of his thing. Did Fandom, Natalie? Did Fandom give Will and April a ship name? I haven't heard it before.
No, and I hate all ship names, so I don't want to go looking for it. I don't think so. But yeah, no, that I do not like them. I don't particularly, you know, think that they need to be a thing. So yeah,
fair enough.
Uh-huh.
Okay, so there's a hidden gem in this episode, guys. And it's Brittany's "I think my cat is reading my diary again." Good lord, that's funny. That's good stuff. Because it's just...
Is it? Is it, though?
Yes, because that's
funny,
Heather
it's
Morris.
Funny at the start of the... I think it is. I think it's funny just based on the timing. Like, it's literally just, like, you got one scene. The beginning of one scene is Brittany going to Santana. "I think my cat is reading my diary." And that's it. And then Mercedes starts talking right away. And I think it's just the timing that makes
yes.
it great.
Yes. That comedic timing is not... current on Glee is as much, and if it is, it feels a lot more forced, because they're trying to, you know, find that dolphins are gay shark moment again, and here they did. They hit it real hard, and it was great, because to me it's like Heather Morris is just kind of like I was saying, this hidden gem of the early episodes of Glee, where you kind of see her as a background character every once in a while. Like, probably her biggest plot was that thing with Finn, and before that, Single Ladies. But she really is, I think, ruined from how much she's exploited later on, because they try and get a lot more moments like that out of her, and it doesn't work.
I know. I don't want to ever forget how funny Brittany was in this season one, because she was freaking hilarious. Like, yeah.
I didn't love it because it's all she had, if you know what I mean. Santana, for example, had moments. She had one-liners, and then she had moments that were easy to grow into a plot. Whereas Brittany had one-liners, and they never gave her any moments that could have grown into a plot, and that's why her character ended up being so terrible when they did actually give her a plot. I think they did her a disservice by just making her a one-liner machine. Not that I don't think, anyone, Heather Morris even was that invested in Brittany having, like, a, character. She just seemed to want to be there as a dancer and stuff, and actually, was not that keen on acting originally. But but that being said, I think that having all of those one-liners, it built up her into a caricature when every other character was actually getting rounded out. And so when they're finally like, oh, we need to give her a plot that actually makes you care about her as a human, it became very difficult.
Yeah,
definitely. I think that what you're saying there, I mean, we're kind of just talking general here, but like when Brittany gets upset with Artie for calling her stupid, I think that probably had a lot of potential because that always broke my heart when, like, she said, you're the only person in the school who didn't call me that. Yeah. I'm getting shivers thinking about that because that was pretty powerful. And I think that if they could have sort of stuck on that line, it could have been great. But yeah, I know what you mean. But I mean, I would have honestly have been fine with Brittany just being there. It's just this random
and never having a plot, just being a one-liner. Yeah,
yeah, I would have been fine with that. But I mean, it's kind of hard when you're putting her with Santana, who had a pretty big plot.
Yeah, like we were referencing before, it was
a
mode by which Santana could rise up and become a major character. Yeah.
Caitlin. Right. Oh, just a second. I was going to say, Caitlin, you haven't really been on Glee Chat since Brittany has been like a present character, if you know what I mean. Were you ever a fan of her or anything like that?
Not particularly, no.
No?
I think once she starts speaking a little bit more frequently, she becomes pretty nasty. So
yeah, I think I was kind of like, oh, she got really like mean and awful. Like, and she tried to use her like stuff as an excuse. And I don't know, I wasn't never a fan either, but yeah.
Well, much like Becky, and it makes sense that they became such good friends later on.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Because they're just horrible human beings who just, I mean, Becky.
Okay, but Brittany's not that bad, okay?
She's horrible, Jack.
I know what you're talking about, like how she uses her excuses like as prom. She like shuts down people and then it's okay for her to do the same, but not for people to talk to
her. Like Blaine's hair.
I'm just saying that Becky is a lot worse of a character than a lot worse of a person in general than Brittany is.
Jack, if we're in Tears, or if we're in Rings of Hell, I believe Becky would be just a little bit below Brittany, but not too much farther. Only because the content of her accusations and her jokes, if you can call them that, are a lot more crude. And Brittany's to come from a more honest place, when Becky seems to just want to knock down people because she just feels insecure or something. But Brittany seems that she really just is just kind of like, yeah, she's speaking her mind into honesty, so I can kind of appreciate that, but she doesn't do it at the right time.
No, I think because Becky got to a point, like Becky at one point, you would not mind when she'd say kind of offensive stuff, because like she was always so sweet and sort of just, but then that's all she had was just offensive off the bat. Whereas Brittany was established as an innocent character at first, and then when she would kind of say some stupid stuff and offensive stuff, it wouldn't be great, but it was kind of masked by her already innocence in that sense. Whereas
I don't know, Jack. I think later on Brittany became like really nasty. Like, it wasn't innocent. It wasn't like, oh, I'm so sweet, I didn't know that was mean, if you know what I mean. She's vindictive. She's like, she's cruel. And I don't know. I'm not into it. But like, I think that her thoughts are not kind person's thoughts. And
That's how I feel about her.
They seem to flip-flop on it a bit. And I mean, we'll see more of her later, but I really think that, yeah, she became like, the stuff that she'd come out with, whether it was, excusable or not, it proved that her thoughts about people were awful. Like, that she was a mean person, basically. And, I don't know where that came from, but oh well.
Perhaps this hidden storyline of her being abducted, I don't know. But moving on for Brittany, guys, we have the beginning of Carol and Bert, but it's not in a good way, I guess you could say. It happens because Kurt wants to get closer to Finn, so he very creepily sets up their parents so that he can be a stepbrother of sorts in there and live in the same bedroom as his crush. That is twisted.
It's so creepy.
It's pretty bad.
Yeah, yeah. Caitlin, what are your thoughts on this?
Oh, this is just Kurt at his manipulative worst. Like, I just have such a hard time with this, that he really sinks pretty low, that he's, I want to get this, so I'm going to manipulate the feelings of one of the people I care about the most in my entire life and this other innocent person's feelings. And then when it doesn't quite go my way, I'm going to be really personally offended about it.
Preach it. It's fucking I mean the exact terrible. Same thing. Yeah, definitely.
Ugh. Well, guys, if anything, we're getting something good out of this because Carol and Bert are really cute from the get-go. So it's
they're adorable.
I suppose you could say it's meant to be because they have that moment that Jack referenced to me. I'm sure you can quote the exact line, actually, of what they're kind of joking about. Wasn't it denim jeans or something to that effect?
Acid wash jeans.
Yeah, and it's just they yeah, really kind of mix really well right there. They're not oil and vinegar. We can say that much. They're definitely like they're chocolate and peanut butter here. So
it makes... I really like them, and it does make me a little bit sick that, like, you know, it was like that Kurt didn't actually give a damn, if you know what I mean.
You know, some of the best things of Glee have come from horrible actions, a la Will's pot business to get Finn into the club. So it's kind of like, you know, beauty can come out of nasty things is a good theme you can get out of Glee if you had to try and scrape a moral out of that horrible weirdness. But and it's funny, too, because with the perspective we have now, like, obviously we're going to have the episode Furt, which is going to be a big, big deal for Finn and Kurt and Finn's acceptance of Kurt's crush on him into becoming a brother to him or something to that effect. But but it's also important that, you know, even in the most recent Nationals episode where Jack was referencing Sam taking the leadership role, that Carol and Bert are now so invested in the Glee Club because they had both of their sons in it that they have kind of carried on the spirit of that with the new kids, you know? So this is the beginning of a lot of stuff. And it's funny, too, that it starts off in such a weird, twisted way that so much good came out of it. But, Jack, you had something to say?
Yeah, I mean, it's really just rambling about Kurt, I guess. But I do know what you're saying. It's just, it's rewatching it, it's so hard to get behind Kurt. Like, I remember, Kurt was, like, one of my favorites, I guess. But I think it was just based on, like, the fact that there was no one else like him on TV, or who I'd seen at least, you know. And I guess that's a good thing to say in general. But I don't know, and just rewatching it, it's just so hard to look at Kurt and think that he's doing the right thing, you know. And you want to get upset when he's saying to Bert, oh, you know, you wanted to have guy talk with somebody else, I'm a guy, yada yada. But it's all like his plan going to crap. Like what you said, Caitlin,
yeah.
He's getting upset about it. And I'm just like, you're doing this to yourself, like back the heck off. And then he continues to mess up in later episodes. Like, and that's why I was always, I mean, I shouldn't go ahead, but I really liked when Kurt gets called out on all of this, you know, when Finn's like, if I did this to a girl, I'd have a restraining order, you know.
Yeah, I rewatching this actually. I don't, you know, at this point, I would have had pretty strong feelings towards Kurt, and I would have, you know, I might have sympathized with him a bit. I still thought it was weird, but definitely rewatching it this time, that scene between Bert and Kurt in the basement, I was like 100% team Bert in that scene. I was just like, Kurt, you're making yourself into a victim. You are not a victim. You are making yourself into a victim, and I don't think I would have thought that the first time I watched the show, but watching it now, I definitely do.
Well, I think it also shows,
go right ahead, Caitlin.
He really doesn't care much about Finn as a person because ends up being such a good thing for him, and he was clearly spying on that conversation outside the window at the end.
That was so creepy.
But they have
something
really...
out of a Scream movie. It was just not cool.
They have this really touching conversation where Bert gets Finn to calm down and sort of accepts their relationship, and Bert is so good for Finn, and if Kurt really cared about Finn's needs the way he's saying that he's in love with him, then he would be happy that he's getting this male influence in his life, but he's really just wanting, you know, it's very selfish and not motivated by actual concern for Finn.
You can just say it. He's looking to get into Finn's pants. He doesn't really care about him emotionally. It's unfortunate. It's, you know, it's and also an interesting point that I suppose besides maybe Will and Grace, that this is a lot of America watching TV's impression of what a homosexual man acts like. and the fact that Glee went to the extent of showing an unhealthy crush on a straight man as opposed to a longing background one as it perhaps began might have turned off some people toward the idea of not even Kurt, but maybe toward, I don't know, having a homosexual person around a straight person, because it became so unhealthy, because it came so obsessive, and because it came so dangerous. It makes you, I mean, he was stalking them out the window. That's creepy. That's stalker. Okay. So to me, I feel that Glee could have done without the storyline completely. I don't know how it advanced Kurt too much. And I still looking forward, like I said, to Furt. I can't think of how Finn would be okay with Kurt whatsoever, regardless of what they've been through, because no conversation, nothing could really lead them toward a good path when it started off so, like, acidically. It's just, it's disgusting to see, as Caitlin and I were just both referencing, you know, such a libido-enforced motive of a character that, yes, Jack would have probably gotten him a restraining order should he have been in a traditional male-female relationship. It just, there's a lot of bad going on with that. So does anyone else have strong feelings about Finn and Kurt that have not yet been mentioned?
Well, like what you were saying before, Mitch, about I've just completely lost my train of thought now. Sorry, you go, Natalie.
No, it's okay. I mean, mine is just that it's weird and it's creepy. And I don't necessarily agree with what you're saying about, you know, people, you know, being, you know, worried about a gay person in general being around a straight person in general. Maybe that's just me, because I would, you know, never really judge. I don't think I've ever really judged people on a whole, like, outside of individual actions. Like, I wouldn't be like, oh, this is what all people do, if you know what I mean. I just don't.
Well, Natalie, you're really a much better person than a lot of other people, I could say that.
Well, I've never really thought like that, so I don't really understand.
Good.
But
obviously you can understand the perspective of being a lot of people in the world who judge
quite
via
worrying, I guess. But
yeah.
It was quite off-putting, and I definitely think I feel more sympathetic towards both Bert and Finn, and not towards Kurt in rewatching it now. I can't remember at the time. I doubt I was, like, defending Kurt's actions or anything at the time, because it was, you know, objectively terrible. But I didn't feel sorry for him at all standing outside the window crying, if you know what I mean. I was just like, someone close the curtains on that creep. Like, I don't know.
What? Turn on the sprinklers, right? Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Knowing Kurt, you just break out and singing in the rain anyways. That's all right.
Oh,
okay, so in the interest of time, we're going to move on to the last little bit of Finn taking a very long time to get over his father's death. And this is, I think, very appropriate, because Finn seems to have a lot of maturity issues where he doesn't know how to act like the large body that he is. He appears as an adult, but isn't mentally. So to see him pining over his father's ashes and his picture, and even having that really sweet moment in Kurt's creepy song where he's singing to his father's picture, it hit me that what I was just saying, that Finn has a lot of growing up to do, a lot more than a lot of these other characters do, because a lot of them, for instance, even like Rachel, seem more mature than I think their age would allow. But Finn does seem like a typical 15, 16-year-old, especially one that had grown up with such a heroic father figure. So, Jack, not knowing what we do know later, but just from this perspective, do you think it's a sweet thing that Finn was holding on to his father for so long, or do you think that it was just kind of time to let go peacefully and to let his mom date, you know, Bert in a healthy way?
Well, I mean, it's hard to say, because I haven't been in a situation where I've had to grow up without a father, because, you know, I've got both parents who are together. But I don't know. It's honestly, it's hard to say. Like, everyone deals with grief differently. I don't know. I mean, I think that the show handled this situation very well in terms of like Carol and Finn, their conversation, and like Carol explaining to him where she's at, and that's where she needs to be, and you know. Because it's been, what, like 16 years, but you can't really blame Finn for wondering about his father and all that. Which kind of makes it even a bit more heartbreaking, knowing that he didn't actually die in the war. He died from drug problems afterwards, you know. But, I mean, this scene destroyed me when Carol was explaining to Finn how she talks to the Ashes every night before she goes to bed, and I couldn't help but like have little like headcanon about Finn, and you know, but that's just another whole story there.
Well, I'm interested. What headcanon?
Oh no, like you know, like I was just imagining Carol saying. Yeah, I for a split second there, I just imagined Carol saying that to, like, Bert or somebody about that's what she does to Finn, you know, now that Finn's passed away.
Right, yeah, her moment where she references how she's still, like, something about, yeah. like, watching TV with him or talking to him or, yeah.
Well, like, before she goes to bed, tells him about a day asking him for advice, and that just, yeah, I didn't want to think about that, but I couldn't help it.
Well, to me, that is a healthier way of dealing with a loss and a grief because, as much as I wouldn't know myself, I'm with you, Jack. I have never been in a similar position to this. From what I've judged, seeing on the outside perspective of seeing people deal with grief, talking to a grave, referencing to them in prayer, or knowing that they're gone, but kind of speaking to what their spirit or their memory would have wanted, seems like a healthy way of keeping them alive, but not in an obsessive way, of just being like, you know, trying to keep them a part of your life like they would want you to, if that's what they would have wanted. So it seems that that's what Finn's dad would have wanted, for Carol to still be talking to him post-mortem. Natalie, do you have any strong feelings or thoughts about this entire Finn-dad plotline?
I mean, that last scene with Carol I really liked, and I mean, I thought it was kind of important. I think that Finn might have had a more realistic idea of grief and, like, attachment, you know, if he'd even known his father, if you know what I mean? Like, because Kurt... Mm-hmm. Kurt, I mean, even though Kurt is a callous, cold bitch, you know, he was okay in theory with
his
dad.
He's a cold-hearted snake.
You know, he was...
You're a mean one, Mr. Kurt.
He was, in theory, okay with his dad dating Carol, if you know what I mean, and his mother's only been dead for 8 years as opposed to Finn his whole life about his father. And, I mean, Finn knows his mother's dated other people because of the pilot, you know, with that, you know, Darren, the grass... spraying guy.
Oh, that's right. I didn't think of that.
And he, yeah. Yeah, Natalie, he was very okay with that.
I don't think the concept is, you know, the idea of him, of his mother having, like, a boyfriend, but, you know, or maybe just as a child he had less, you know, feelings about it, if you know what I mean. Like, he didn't realize what it all meant as much. But now, at this age, he, like, you know, he doesn't want stuff to change in his house and his life and stuff like that. It's not the boyfriend aspect. It's like, I think, the house aspect and, like, getting rid of the father's presence.
Well,
but
that
also,
was a bit much, wasn't it? When she was just taking away the stuff without telling Finn in a way that she knew he would have been sensitive toward it. Was she trying to rip off the band-aid really quickly? Or?
I mean, but also I think, you know, if Finn actually had memories of his father, he wouldn't be, like, that, you know, hung up about, like, you know, that kind of stuff. Like,
it's more symbolic.
She says to him, like, you know, you didn't know him. Like, literally, you didn't know him. Because Finn has no memories of his father. And so all he has is, like, stuff. But if he had memories, he might not have been too, like, crazily attached to the stuff. Like, and yes, everyone has, like, mementos and keepsakes and stuff like that. But, like, you know, and maybe the chair thing is important. Like, maybe to keep the chair, you know... It would be important for some people, but you know, I think that if Finn actually had, you know, memories as opposed to just stuff, he might not have been so, you know, hung up on that.
Mm-hmm. And
Sorry.
That's okay. Well, we had a little bit of news to get to, too, and I didn't want to run too late. So I'll just ask Caitlin to wrap up home, if we could, with... any final thoughts that you had, Caitlin, on whether or not I want to go to Carol? Her and Bert make a good or bad couple from the fact that they've lost so much together, and eventually, you know, obviously, when the character Finn passes and Carol is without both her son and her husband, is this a good mix between these characters? Is it really meant to be, or is it more damaging that they would be together? I'm not trying to suggest either way. I'm presenting both so you can make your decision.
It never occurred to me that it might be damaging. They have such good chemistry, and they just seem so genuinely infatuated with each other. And they have this level of understanding of each other and what they've been through that other people probably wouldn't have. So they have probably a deeper connection than other people might in their situation. So I think they work wonderfully together.
I agree. Yes, I agree. And yeah. Natalie, how do you feel about that situation?
Yeah, I mean, again, I never thought that they would be bad together. I mean, it did seem a bit hurried, if you know what I mean. Like that, oh, I love your mom, like from 2 weeks ago. But we don't know how long that's meant to, about a month or a little while. And I mean, and Kurt was a bit gross with his like pushing of it, you know, with a sense of urgency. But he's not wrong. Like people who are older and find someone that they connect with and who have been lonely, they might actually want, you know, things to move ahead pretty quickly and sort of make a life together. I never thought that they would be bad together, those two characters. You know, the situation with the sons is obviously horrible, but, yeah, the characters themselves I never had a problem with, and I thought it was a good thing.
Jack, final question leading off of where Natalie just left us of it being healthy for the parents but not for the sons for this relationship. Do you think that Carol and Bert caught on to the fact that Kurt was not only just crushing after Finn, but had set them up for this? And if so, do you think that they chose to ignore that because they still found themselves, you know, a very reasonable couple? Or if they just never saw it and they were blind to that and they were just kind of still blissfully happy in the fact that they just happened to trip over each other, as it seems to them?
I don't know. It kind of hurts me a bit to think that, like, I don't know. I honestly don't think that they had seen Kurt's motivations, and I don't think they knew much about it, and that kind of really hurts me to think that, like, that if Bert was to realize that he put them together just because Kurt was so deluded to get with Finn, sort of thing. And I don't really think that that was ever established, to be honest, if that's making sense.
I think Bert addresses it later. I'm not 100% sure, but I'm pretty sure. Not necessarily. I think they would have both been very offended to find out, you know, that they were set up just for that. But I think Bert, he knows about the Finn situation later.
I recall him there being a conversation, but a part of me kind of thinks as well that maybe Bert thinks that Kurt fell for Finn after Bert and Carol had gotten together, instead of them getting together solely based on Kurt's intentions. Yeah, I'm not too sure. Yeah. It's very blurry water.
Yeah, I mean, I'd be pretty offended if I was them and pissed. You know, found that that was the basis. I'd just be like, you. Yeah, I don't know. I wouldn't be happy about that. But
not stopping in such a downer of a plot line, I think it should be noted that in the same effect that I liked Kristen Chenoweth's version of House Not a Home, One Less Bell to Answer, I loved so much her version of the last song from The Wiz. That finale song is just it's like it was meant for her.
Right.
And that, I mean, that, that might be kind of a wink and a nod to Wicked, and however it may be. I really, really liked that, and it closed it off in a nice way, so I suppose we should end this episode of Glee Chat recap in that way before we get on to very exciting news. And trust me, we're going to have a lot to talk about coming up.
Well, I mean, we'll try and bluster through that pretty quickly because we have been going for a little while now. I don't know, the songs in this episode, I didn't love any of them. I was not moved by any songs in this episode at all. Quotes, lots of good quotes, just quickly if anyone had any of those before we finish up for the episode 16. Caitlin, did you have any particular quotes or, like, funny moments for this one?
Okay, two things. One, Carol, when she tells Finn, you were conceived on a pinball machine.
Oh, my God, his face.
I just burst out laughing. And then his face. After Mercedes sings her song at the pep rally or whatever, Kurt comes up to her and says, I was wrong. And I said, hell just froze over.
Oh, my God. In that beautiful performance, what the hell was with him, like, just not turning around for the whole, like three-quarters of the song? Did anyone else notice that? Like, all of the other cheerios, you know, sung and joined in. And Kurt just, like, stood with his back to them all, like, still in formation, but just not turning around. Like, I don't want to be a part of this. And it was just, like, really weird.
I didn't notice that. Oh,
I didn't go notice and watch that either.
Go and watch it. It's so weird. I don't even know what happened there. I really liked honestly, though I don't like the creepy setting up, I liked the flashback with Kurt and Bert at the parent-teacher, you know, with the cookie, and they're like, how do you know this is an organic? And he's like, because the label is encrusted on the cookie. And then later he's like, you both have dead spouses, you two should talk. And I'm just like, oh, God. He's terrible, but it is funny, if you know what I mean. And also, I really loved the kind of the plot with Jane Lynch, like Sue Sylvester, and the journalist who's doing the hard-hitting expose, and her face, like, afterwards in his office when he kind of was like, you know, you did all these great things, and she was like, yes, I did, and her kind of not knowing how to react to that. I kind of really liked that bit as well. But what about you, Jack?
My doc actually deleted for home, so I was trying to struggle to remember stuff. But one thing I definitely remember is when Tracy Pendergrass, the reporter, he's talking to Sue, and it's just like, and the fact that you called me rerun a few times makes you think you're a little racist.
Yeah, pretty much.
It's pretty funny. Yeah. And I really loved Mercedes song. And one thing that really annoyed me, and it shouldn't annoy me as much as it does, is when Mercedes asking the crowd, like, have you ever felt, no, you got no friends, fat, too many pimples, yada, yada. Most of the Glee Club puts up their hand except for Rachel. And for some reason,
even Jesse, that was the thing. I was like, oh, I like Jesse participating. And yeah, Jesse's
for years has always bugged me.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's always bugged me. I don't know.
Maybe, are you sure she doesn't? Like, maybe she didn't want to be, you know, like, she's insecure about, like, showing her insecurities. But anyway.
Oh, trust me, she doesn't put up a hand, yeah.
Yeah, I always liked seeing Jesse participate. I don't know why. I'm like, Jesse's participating. I was excited by that, so.
Like, he's above doing this, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I just like Jesse being a kid. I don't know. I like him being, I like thinking about his inner depths. But what about you, Mitch? Any particularly funny moments just quickly to round off?
Yeah, mine's when April is talking to Will in the end, and she said, I went home. I told Buddy that if he wanted to keep me around, he'd ditch the old lady and give yours truly the top job. And then he died.
It was so weird.
And then it gets even better because she goes, one of his eyes went all funny and he had a stroke right in front of me. Will's like, geez, April, are you okay? She's like, okay, I'm rich.
It's so weird.
Just, she just has no concept of the real world. She sees it as like commercial gain.
That's so funny.
Okay, so I'm going to invite everyone who doesn't want to be spoiled for season 6 to end the podcast here, and we'll say bye to you all. We are going to talk about quite a few of the big news releases and, you know, episode, like, not leaks, but, like, all of the facts that have come out about season 6 so far. And so, you know, I'm sort of going to quickly read those out, and we'll discuss some of the major points there because there is some important things that we have some feelings about. But I don't know anyone in the world who would have been able to avoid these spoilers, but if you are looking to avoid season 6 spoilers, we'll say bye to you now and speak to you on the next Glee Chat flashbacks. But in terms of spoilers, so bye-bye, everyone, bye. In terms of spoilers, bye, non-spoiler people. We know that, okay, very quickly, season 6 is going to see the return of Quinn, Puck, Mercedes, Blaine, Kurt, Santana, Artie, Rachel, and Sam. And that's all going to be, you know, it's going to be set back in Lima in some way for those characters. We don't know how much people are going to be present. Santana, for example, is only going to be a guest star, apparently at her request, rather than a regular. A recurring guest star, Alex Anders, who's the music producer for Glee, has started posting photos of people's, you know, first recording sessions and all of that kind of stuff.
I died when I saw Diana Agron in there.
I was really shocked to see Diana recording so fast as well. Yeah, I was very shocked to see Diana recording so quickly.
Happy. Caitlin was probably disappointed. Back as well.
That was kind of sigh.
Yeah. I'm really, like, fingers crossed, sorry, Caitlin, but fingers crossed for end of season Puck and Quinn wedding. I'd prefer that over Clayne. Yeah. So if we're going to have a wedding, you know, can we please have it be them instead of, you know, they're all, apparently the jump is only 6 months to Lima, so that they're not going to be that old. They're only going to be about 22, so they might still be a bit young to have, you know, wedding, whatever, but whatever. If we're going to have a freaking clean wedding, not interested. Anyway.
I think that even, like, in a show standpoint, and avoiding the clean hate that we don't want to see clean at a wedding, I feel like it's important because Quinn and Puck had the last song of the Glee Club, And like this, and even Will says, "Oh, in a way, we've come full circle, you know, because we can't really come full circle with Finn and Rachel, which would have been the ideal situation."
Yeah.
So I think it would be really, really suiting to finish off the series
their
with the
relationship, like because they're an original, yeah. You know, their you know,
especially
coupleness, yeah, I guess is right a throwback, you know.
Yeah, definitely. Especially with their scene, like looking at Finn's jersey when they're just like, "Oh, we saved him for Rachel," and it's just like, "Oh." Oh, man, I'm getting goosebumps thinking about it.
I really would like them to have some credit done to them, especially Puck, obviously, because he's my boo.
Yeah.
But Mercedes is going to be coming back, I guess. So her tour, we don't have, you know, her, maybe her and Sam. Artie, apparently, not Tina. It doesn't say anything about Tina because...
I know, you know. Tina's an
oh, no.
So bad.
And none of the 2.0s. None of the 2.0s.
It doesn't mention the 2.0s. Even though the 2.0s should technically still be at the school, I guess.
I was going to ask you guys about that. Like, they've introduced like 5 new characters for the Glee Club.
They
are
might
we
be
2.0s.
No,
they
the
just
2.0s should be juniors or seniors at this point. And apparently they don't exist anymore.
How horrible is it? Like, you win the Glee Project. And then you're excited to be on the show, and you're like, okay, I only get this, like, 6-episode arc, and then all of a sudden you're on for more, and you're like, oh, they really like me here. And then they just drop you like a hot potato and never talk about you ever again. That's it.
Okay.
Hey, season 4 was – I loved season 4 so much with all my heart. And, like – and the 2.0s were fine in season 4. It's just season 5 messed them up so bad and because they didn't even do anything, you know. They should be there for season 6, and if they try and make up an excuse for 5 characters who were once in the Glee Club that is going to be revived to not
maybe
be in
they
the Glee
just
Club.
Maybe they just got offended that they, you know, Glee Club was disbanded and they gave up on it or something. I'm going to read you guys a list. I mean, this is going to get relatively spoilery. Like, this is going to, you know, some of the major plot points of the season or of the first few episodes. That have come from, you know, some bloggers who have, you know, it's probably, as I said, probably a controlled leak in the way that Glee has often done or someone involved in the first taping. But, you know, yeah, time jump is between 5 and 6 is only 6 months. Rachel and Kurt are going to be leading New Directions. Kurt's earning NYADA credit for his efforts, so he's still a student. Blaine is leading the Warblers at Dalton. Don't know the circumstances that bring him back to Dalton or whether he's still a NYADA student. Don't know why Rachel is in Ohio, but probably... can assume she returned to Los Angeles after the pilot failed. Will Schuster is heading up Vocal Adrenaline. Karofsky will be Blaine's new love interest. Max is locked in for at least half a season's worth of episodes. Blaine and Karofsky are together in the first episode. Something develops later. There are no definite plans to use the season 4 or 5 newbies. However, they will most likely come back in near the end of season. That's just someone's speculation. That's not confirmed. The 5 new McKinley kids will be incorporated into the first 2 episodes to some degree, but their storylines are still being developed. And that was an earlier lot of spoilers, and there are actually some more, which I'll just see if there are any that are worth saying.
But what trash that they're introducing brand new Glee clubbers when they just have.
I mean, we spoke about this in the last episode, and I think that they're not going to be a huge focus. They're just going to be random characters that are just.
Would you like to, hear some more, you know, stuff about that, about the first couple of episodes, spoilers, because we do have some more. So Artie, Mercedes, Santana, not in the first episode, though they will be returning to the show. Rachel, Blaine, Kurt, Sam, Figgins, Will, Sue, Karofsky are in the first episode. Rachel's pilot goes to series, but it bombs and it's cancelled, so her Hollywood career's dead, comes back, ends
Suck
up moving
shit,
home.
Bitch.
Really... ends up moving home. Her dads are divorcing. One of them has moved out. Hiram, Leroy. Yeah, I'm like, why would you do that?
Wow. Right. Spoilers. I didn't even know about this.
Yeah, this is someone. This is someone who basically has, you know, blog. I'm pretty sure they're connected to someone on the show, and they would have got a film.
Wow.
Rachel goes to Sue and is, you know, wants her to reinstate the Glee Club. You know, goes above her head to the school superintendent, convinces them to revive the Glee Club, and. You know, it's one of the conditions is that she's the director. Blaine and Kurt already broken up. Backstory, after Blaine moved back into the loft, couple continued to argue. Kurt decided they were too young to be engaged and broke it off. Upset after the breakup, Upset after the breakup, Blaine allowed his grades to slip and was cut from Nyada. In the episode, Blaine has already moved back in with his parents, taken a job at Dalton to be the director of the Warblers, despite the fact that the Warblers didn't have a faculty advisor before. After months apart, Kurt changes his mind about Blaine and heads to Libra to try and win him back, but it's too late because Blaine and Karofsky are a couple. What the mofo is going on?
Oh my god.
Yeah, Karofsky is a college student and totally out as a gay man. Blaine tells Kurt he's dating Karofsky. After Kurt arrives in Lima, Rachel convinces him to run Glee with her, and he remains a Nyada student taking the job as like an internship. Sam works for Coach Beast. Artie's still in film school. Mercedes still on tour with Brittany and Santana. New kids appear in the episode. Will is the director of Vocal Adrenaline. No Glee, no new Glee tryouts yet. So
that's just funny. Did he kill off Shelby or like what?
I mean, the big pardon? What?
Oh no, it wasn't even Shelby.
It wasn't Shelby. It was Jesse.
Yeah,
that's the thing. And I'm like, it was. And apparently, that job's open. Like, oh, there's a job opening. So where did Jesse go? Please come back. Save us all from this. But
isn't it funny that Will will be the character by which Jesse will come back?
Oh god. So two big things: Rachel going back to her show fails, and she goes back to Lima to revive the Glee Club. Sue bans all of the arts from the school, and she goes above, you know, Sue's head to get it reinstated. And the condition is that she has to direct the Glee Club. So, Jack, what do you think Rachel directing the Glee Club will be like?
All right. Yeah, got strong opinions. I am really, 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 really happy that her pilot bombed. I want to see Rachel just at her lowest, and Rachel's still my favorite character. Like, if this is the direction that we're sort of meant to be seeing her go in, and if they do it well, I'm gonna be fine with it. Like, I've come on here many times and yelled at her for leaving Broadway and stuff, but if she like sort of takes in Finn's footsteps and, you know, and does all this, I'm gonna be fine with that. Had no idea about her dad's breaking up.
No, that might not even be true. I mean, that was just on this list of spoilers. I don't know if that's true.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have as many strong opinions of people thinking that she shouldn't be back in Lima, just because I'm fine with her just hitting complete rock bottom, and I want her to realize the mistakes that she's made, and yeah, that's my, and I want somebody to call her out on all of her shit in like not in a foreshadowing way. In, like, a actual, like, a character being like, you're so stupid for doing this, like, now you're back here, actually make something good of your life instead of just being a little brat, like, you know.
I mean, Mitch, do you think that, like, Rachel just becoming the leader of the Glee Club would be, you know, the right thing for the rest of her life? Like, is that, is she just going to be the next Will Schuster, like her and Kurt? Or do you think that she is still
bound for
better things? Like, how is she going to get out of this situation?
Oh, she just needs to. Back in the days when Roxanne was on Glee Chat a lot, I remember her referencing people who go back to high school a lot, you know, and would do the same kind of thing that Rachel's doing and how pitiful it was. I'd have to agree, unfortunately. I mean, no apologies if that is something that someone's doing and that's their own business. I suppose that to each his own. For my own standards, I wouldn't do that. And it's sad to see Rachel go from being such a big star, beating out Will. And I mean, in a lot of ways, she was kind of always destined to do that. But I don't know that she really didn't believe that ever, you know. And I'm glad she did. And I just want her to continue to rise above that man, because if she really just takes over the Glee Club and that's it, Glee would just be such a waste for me. I would be so disappointed. In the end, I'd be like, so what was the point of having our star not do anything special? Like, she tried, and she did something really cool for a while, and then she just kind of messed it up by doing dumb things and just ended up back in her high school. Like, what?
Awesome. No, I agree with that, and I also think that, like, the Glee Club is well-suited for her, because Finn always brought out the best in Rachel, and I don't think Rachel is necessarily the leader type. Like, but I think that being in this role is going to make her learn and bring her back down to a level that Finn was able to bring her to based on the role that she's in, if that makes sense. Finn was such a huge role as a leader in the club and then actually leading the club, like with the new kids and stuff, that I really think Rachel could learn and improve. And if that's the direction they take with her character, I would freaking love it. Even though I really don't think she should have left Broadway, this would be the next alternative that the character should go on to.
I mean, I assume, and I'm not sure, you know, how we're going to fix this. I assume that, you know, that she's going to get another, she's going to do this, and she's going to do this, you know, for Finn and for the person that she used to be and for all of the new people, and they're going to kind of start this Glee Club off again. But I'm going to assume that by the end of the season, she has another big break and that Kurt also has another option, because neither of them were kind of meant to stay in Lima. And that maybe they, you know, with all the good grace in the world, pass the Glee Club direction over to either Sam or Will again, if you know what I mean. Because we had that shot of Sam. Sam's, you know, at the school as an assistant coach, and he was staring in through the window. So, Caitlin, would you prefer to see, you know, Sam take over new directions? Or do you think Will might have, like, a, you know, change of heart about, oh, no, these, you know, vocal adrenaline, it's too competitive and crazy, and I need my dumb little kids again?
Anything to keep Will Schuster away from those children.
Yeah, pretty much.
But I would like Sam. I mean, I think Sam has a good temperament for it, so I would enjoy seeing him doing it of his own volition and not having it forced on him by one William Schuster.
Yeah. Do you think that, like, maybe he'll see sort of Kurt and Rachel doing it and keep trying to get involved, if you know what I mean? Like, oh, I can, you know... But, I mean, how do you feel for the kids who are going to have to deal with, like, Kurt as their instructor? Because I feel like he might make some irrational choices.
Well, he and Rachel will probably be going at it half the time, because that's what they spend half their time doing.
Oh, good.
And they'll probably see nothing but show tunes.
I hope one of their kids has, like, no time for them, and they're just like, both of you are just, you just need to stop. Like, I hope one of the kids hates them as much as Ryder hated Will Schuster, if you know what I mean.
Oh, that'd be amazing.
So the other big plot...
I forgot...
Oh, sorry, go on, Jack.
Oh, sorry, I was going to say, I actually completely forgot, I just remembered now. Did you guys say the apparent song list that was leaked about the
I'm gonna get to the songs after we talk about the plot. I have the song list post up as well. Yes. The other big part of the plot is Blaine and Karofsky apparently a gross, affectionate couple. And, I mean, we love Karofsky. I think nearly everyone, you know, who's watched the show from start to finish has... great appreciation for Max Adler's acting and the kind of the plot line of Karofsky. That being said, how does everyone feel about the idea of Blaine and Karofsky as a couple? Mitch?
Okay, I don't think they're going to be a couple. Sorry, Jack,
they're definitely a couple.
If these
spoilers are correct, they are a couple.
I know that, like, the THR report, the original, it only said romantically entangled. And I did not take for that to... I didn't read that as Karofsky is going to be Blaine's boyfriend. I didn't read that at all. I just thought, well, that's just people just thinking something and then the whole internet jumping on this one idea. And I was always in the back of my mind just like, no, I don't think they're going to be a couple. But if the spoilers that you had read out are correct, then I suppose I can't really avoid that.
Over the one that said that they are a couple because it was too gross, but I'll tell you now. Yeah, they are couples, and they even have pet names for each other. I don't want to say this out loud.
Please don't. They're awful.
I have to hear. Come on,
I want
to
hear it. I have to hear it now.
Yogi Bear and Boo Boo.
Oh, that's kind of cute.
No, it's not.
I'm not even going to respond to that.
No, it's not cute. It's disgusting.
Where in canon is it so bad for Blaine and Karofsky to like each other?
Can we talk about that for a second? Yeah, Jack. Yeah, okay. I'm going to say, Jack, I think everyone has pretty strong feelings about this.
No,
that's okay. I have sort of put a lot of thought into this, and Caitlin's also put a lot of thought into this. It sounds like you have as well, and we're each going to have a turn. But, Mitch, just to field your question quickly, why is it so bad for Blaine and Karofsky to be together? I think Karofsky is a fantastic character, and I want, like, happiness and a good relationship for him. And I obviously love Blaine, and I obviously hate Kurt and Blaine together. That being said, I cannot imagine Blaine, no matter what happened between him and Kurt, I cannot imagine Blaine, with Blaine's personality, ever forgiving Karofsky for what Karofsky did to Kurt. Given that that's how he and Kurt met, given that that's how he helped Kurt, if you know what I mean, and that he had altercations with Karofsky about, you know, the stuff with Kurt and then how Kurt Kurovsky pursued Kurt later. I don't ship Kurt and Kurovsky whatsoever either, but I can see it being more realistic for Kurt and Kurovsky to have ended up together because they were both the people personally involved in the situation and they could get over it at their own pace. Whereas, you know how someone, if someone like really screws you over and then you and that person kind of sort it out later, but your friends never forgive that person for screwing you over? Do you guys know what I mean?
Exactly. Yep, yep,
that's,
definitely.
That's how I feel about Kurovsky and Blaine. I do not think Blaine would ever, you know, even if Kurt was like, I don't care, Kurovsky and I are friends now, no big deal, I don't think Blaine would ever be okay with him. And so that's why this is like so weird to me. Like, not only did Kurt and Blaine break up, that Blaine would just be like, that he would be so like, you know, apparently over that situation that he'd be like fine with Kurovsky now, no matter how awesome Kurovsky is as a person and like how great he'd be in another person's relationship. Cause I actually do really like that character, but Jack, what were your thoughts on this?
Oh, I mean, you pretty much just, I can't really add
that's
much.
That's my issue exactly with it. I do not. Yeah. That I don't think Blaine would ever be okay with it.
Well, I suppose, in contrast to that, but not in argument against it, but just acknowledgement of our differing standpoints on that, I don't necessarily have an example in my life where I can think of where friends didn't get over something that my enemy did to me, but I'm friends with them and they're not okay with it. And that may be where I'm missing the connection in my personal life, that I can't see why Blainovsky would be such a bad thing. Also, within that same vein, I don't see why it should matter what in the hell happened to Kurt whatsoever to Blaine anymore, because, I mean, to me personally, not to the fandom, not to Glee Chat listeners, once Clayne is over, it's a good thing, it's done, and Blaine should look back at that toxic relationship and say, wow, that wasn't good for XYZ, and Kurt wasn't a good person for ABC, and that's done, we're moving on, and anything that happened with him is ancient history. Mm-hmm. He wasn't even dating him, it's okay, it's like, that was younger, and we were kids, and yes, that was a bully situation, but it just, good came out of it, and...
It's not that I don't think Kurovsky is unforgivable, it's that I think Blaine is the one person in the world that wouldn't forgive him, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, I think
I even think Kurt would forgive him and has. I think Blaine is the one person in the world that would not forgive him. It's not that I don't think he's irredeemable or unforgivable, it's just Blaine. But anyway, Caitlin, your thoughts on this situation?
So the only thing that makes any modicum of sense to me is that this was supposed to be Sebastian, but Grant's off being a superhero, so he wasn't available.
Are you sure about that?
This is the only way that I can, only mental gymnastics that I can get this to work, because that story would make so much more sense with literally everyone but Kurovsky, but Sebastian would make a lot more sense than Kurovsky.
Yeah, any other guy in the entire world.
But Grant has a new show.
Oh, man. Yeah, if it was Sebastian, I'm just thinking about it now, it would actually, legit, with everything we've just spoken about, if you swap the roles of Kurovsky and Sebastian, it would work amazingly. I don't even think of that. That's a great, Oh, man, I wish that was what was happening.
I ship those two. Sorry. But
Kurt and Sebastian would be all right.
That's the thing. No, Caitlin and I had an argument about this. I don't ship Kurt and Kurovsky, but I can imagine it happening more than I can imagine Blaine and Kurovsky happening. But I do think Kurt and Sebastian would have worked really well. And Caitlin hates it.
They're great chemistry. Anyone who says that.
They had such good chemistry.
Really?
They do not like each other. I can go on for hours about how horrible this is.
You don't have to like each other to have good chemistry, and that's the thing. That's what I like about it. But
touché.
Anyway,
I can see both points right then and there. You're right, Natalie.
I don't agree. I know people who, like, it's their main, like, pairing and that they read, like, a lot of fan fiction about it. I don't, like, actively ship it because I just don't care about Kurt anymore. And
I find that pairing, like, personally offensive because I love Sebastian.
Oh,
and he would never. He would never, because he cannot stand the sight of Kurt. So...
Yeah, but that's that kind of like, you know, but you know, you lock him in a closet and they end up making out situation.
Sebastian would punch Kurt in the face. I really do.
There's something to be said about, like,
much.
anger leading to great sexual tension.
See,
to where it's like you want to slap the person so bad that you kind of just end up like making out with them.
I don't think
he has that much regard. Why am I doing this to this person?
I do not think he has enough regard for Kurt to be angry enough to have angry sex with him. Maybe. I think he is very disdainful of Kurt and thinks he is much better than Kurt and that Blaine is too good for Kurt.
Well, yeah.
Why it doesn't work for me at all.
I never felt anything particularly about Blaine and Sebastian. I was like, okay, this one guy thinks this other guy is cute. That's fine. That's about all I thought about that. But it would work now at this point if this was Sebastian instead of Karofsky.
I'm just saying this to reveal my biases, but I do think that it would make more sense if this had originally been intended to be Sebastian, and then they're like, oh, Grant's a superhero.
I know that the show loves Max Adler, obviously, like that, and he's a great actor and he is a great character to bring back, but I'm not sure this is the way to do it.
Yeah, I have no I don't like Karofsky as a character, anything. I don't particularly like Max Adler from what I've heard of his interviews, so sorry, but I am not opposed to seeing him get a happy ending with literally anybody else.
Yeah, a few things about it annoying, because like what somebody said about how the show loves Max Adler. If they loved him so much, why couldn't they just continue a story one on in season three? But that's a whole other story. But
I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, and it's kind of annoying because Clayne, I want Clayne to break up so bad, but I don't want their breakup to mess up which one was a great character.
Like, this seems to set up. It seems to be setting up as a no TP, if you know what I mean. I don't think we're meant to be pro Kurt Karofsky. Pro Blaine Karofsky, and that makes me worried that it's going to be like, ew, gross, Karofsky and Blaine, and then that people are going to be like, you know, oh, it's going to be such a relief when Clayne get back together, if you know what
I
mean.
Maybe. Here's my other theory, that perhaps that when Kurt comes back into the picture, Blaine and Karofsky have become friends, so they make an over-the-top fake relationship. Because the fake
that would
are
be
so
good.
Over-the-top.
Holy shit, yes.
So good. Please, please make this be a thing. This is my only excusable thing for this.
The only way
I could be okay with it.
Yeah.
Because Yogi Bear and Boo Boo are so stupid and gross that it can't be real.
Yes.
And I know no one else agrees with me, but the fact that they think that's cute, but that's totally something I would call John, and he would call me back, and we would love it.
No. But it ties into the bear culture thing. It's like how Karofsky.
Yeah,
it's not just the names.
Okay.
It's not just the names.
A bear cub, remember that?
Yeah, it's because I've heard that I'm a thing called a bear cub, and it's like, is this like a dub, you know, a dom sub relationship? Like, is this like, it's weird. It's
not just
the name.
Well, I'm here to say, so what if it is? It's okay. It's like, to me, I still think that's cute. I do. I really, if this is legitimate or if it's not, I'm happy. I really am either way.
Also, I mean, Yogi Bear and Boo Boo in real life, or at least in the cartoon of Yogi Bear and Boo Boo, were not having gay sex. So it's kind of, yes, I think it's his nephew or something.
Far out.
Like, there's many problems with the Yogi Bear name.
Oh yeah, I can get that. It's kind of like your lack of terms of a male duo at a certain extent, where it's just kind of like you look past whatever those characters might have been to each other, and they fit together for you.
No. How about they just call each other by their names like normal people do?
People in relationships call each other pet names all the time. I don't even reference John as John ever.
I don't and never have.
I never, ever would call him John. It feels foreign when he calls me Mitch. I can't hear it. It doesn't work. And that's just, I don't know, it's the thing I've always done. It's
my
parents.
They can say sweetie or something.
Well, my parents have always called me the same thing, so I guess that's where I got it from. But it's just, is that really so unnatural to do that no one else does that in here?
I've never done it, and I've been in several live-in relationships, and I've never done it.
Really? That's so shocking to me that maybe it's just a me thing. I don't know.
I'm sure it's many people, but I feel like it's like an old person thing.
Yeah, I can get that too. That makes sense.
I don't know. Anyway.
Like a spunk.
Ugh. Anyway, let's go on to, I guess... Yeah, just final thoughts on the Blainovsky situation. You know, is it a big thumbs up or a thumbs down? I'm going to say a thumbs down.
Hashtag thumbs worst.
And everyone knows where I am. I'm okay with it. I'm not a big thumbs up. I'm just okay with it.
I mean, if they pull this off, I will applaud them. If they actually make me like this, I will be incredibly impressed. I don't think it's going to happen, though, because I don't think it fits with Blaine's character. Like, my main it's not that I dislike either character. My main reasoning is that I don't think Blaine's character would ever be okay with this. And I just, I'm like, I would have liked Blaine to go out with Adam Lambert, but what can you do?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Okay,
no, he went off to the same land as Demi Lovato's character of unused Glee characters all sitting around in a smoking parlor saying, remember those days when we were relevant?
Let's talk... Well, they have better things to do than be on Glee. Let's talk for a second about the song list title, which was leaked. It might not be 100% legit, but this is... Apparently, the title of the episode is Loser Like Me, and some of the songs that are going to be in it are Uninvited by Alanis Morissette, Suddenly Seymour from Little Shop of Horrors, and that's going to be Rachel and Blaine, Sing by Ed Sheeran, sung by Blaine and the Warblers, Dance the Night Away by Van Halen, by Vocal Adrenaline, Karma Chameleon, sung by Rachel, and Let It Go by Rachel as well.
No.
So
it was inevitable, guys. She's freaking Idina Menzel's daughter on the show. Come on.
But they've never had rights to Disney songs before. They have not
annoyed.
Done
That's what makes me annoyed. That's what makes me really annoyed.
Wasn't That's Amore in
Yeah. Yeah. No, it was Bella Notte from Lady and the Tramp.
Lady and the Tramp, yeah.
But it's not like a really big deal Disney song, if you know what I mean. They've never done, like, Part of Your World or, like, anything like that.
Oh,
like,
they did Part of Your World, I have a cry.
Yeah, they've never been able to get the rights to a Disney song, so I don't know what happened with this one.
Oh, well, Disney's kind of been shelling it out to the radio stations as was, so...
Yeah.
It can make sense. Or and Demi did sing it, so maybe it's... I don't know, no bad connection there.
We had Demi, Idina Menzel sang it, John Groff was in that movie. I freaking hate Frozen.
Yeah, there's a lot of Frozen connections in Glee now.
I've never seen it, and I've never heard Let It Go. I've avoided it pretty well.
Oh, wow. I'm impressed.
I've only heard it in the movie. I haven't heard it, like, out and about in life. I did not like the movie at all. I thought it had a lot of plot holes, and I think it's incredibly overrated. But, same. Oh, well. Yeah, I could write you an essay on all of the, like unanswered questions in Frozen and, like, how it's shoddily written. So
and I along with that Jesse essay, I think I'd actually read that.
I did not like it, but Karma Chameleon I love, and I don't know how they're going to just do it with one person or why they're going to do it with one person. It might be a mistake, it might be a group number, because that I feel like should be a good number.
Alanis Morissette. Oh, sorry.
Alanis Morissette, I don't know if I'm familiar with this particular Alanis Morissette song. I have a couple of her albums, but that one, Uninvited, I don't know.
Yeah,
if I know.
I've listened to most of her albums.
It's not one of her biggest. I mean, I'm surprised we've gotten to 5 seasons of Glee without You Ought to Know, but then again, that's a pretty violent song.
Or ironic even, right?
Yeah. Any thoughts on any of these songs in particular, Caitlin?
I am not familiar with almost any of them, though I am always happy for any opportunity for Blaine and Rachel to sing together, because I adore them.
Suddenly Seymour from Little Shop of Horrors, that is I don't know why they're going to be doing a duet with each other unless they're, like, combining their clubs and showing how wonderful it can be. Or maybe they're going to be, like, auditioning for community theatre together or something. Oh, my God.
Oh, poor Rachel, no.
Seymour.
Not my baby Rachel, she can't do that.
Seymour in Little Shop of Horrors is, like, one of my top 5, like, dream Broadway roles for Darren to play in the future, so I'm actually really excited for that song in particular, like, to see if he's going to be any good, or if I'm going to, you know, if I was deluding myself. But that role in Little Shop is one of my, like, most top roles for him to eventually one day play.
Would you believe that he'd be able to carry that role vocally? As you said, he didn't have a typical Broadway belt voice.
Yeah, it's not I would, because it's actually not that much of a it's not a Broadway. It's more of a Little Shop was actually written by Alan Menken as mm-hmm. well, who wrote a lot of Disney songs that he, you know, has sung, like, so it's not Broadway style singing, it's more like Disney style singing. Mm-hmm. Though it should be good. I mean, we'll see in the episode if he's got the chops for it. But I really wanted him to do that role. Sing, I love, by Ed Sheeran. I think that'll be good. I don't know how it'll be, like, all of the Warblers and stuff like that. It should be fun, potentially.
Well, that's a song about... Ed Sheeran just released a song about... he was dating Ellie Goulding and she cheated on him. This isn't that song, though, right?
It's not that song.
No, but that would have been an interesting one to do if they wanted, like, Blaine to do that with Kurt. Perhaps Kurt cheats on Blaine again or something crazy. I don't know.
I don't think they need to have songs to tell the stories.
Oh, come on. Those are the best. I love those moments. Oh, wait. I remember you saying you didn't. Yeah. I loved, like, No Air, for instance, like, walking through the hallways. Like, oh, eat that stuff up. Obviously, with my episode home. Yeah. Go ahead, Jack.
So I was going to say, like, with Ed Sheeran, I mean, this is a good song, but I feel like that, like, if they're going to do Ed Sheeran, they could, I mean, I don't know what the moment's going to be like, but Ed Sheeran's got so many other potential, like, songs with great potential for this show. I'm not even talking about his, like, most, like, famous songs, like Lego House and Small Bump and stuff. Like, if you listen to this album plus, there are some great, like, just songs on there that, like, they really, really could have pulled, like, Wake Me Up and, you know, and I'm surprised they actually haven't done Give Me Love, you know.
But, they never do, like, album tracks of a pop singer, if you know what I mean. They never do album tracks of a current pop person. They would never do that, like, if you know what I mean.
Unless you're Matthew Morrison and you want to just show off, you know,
yeah, a really cool song. They would never just do an unknown song. They only do that when they're doing, like, a tribute episode with a lot of different songs. That being said, this song, Sing, is quite different, like, to Ed Sheeran's, like, first album. I didn't even know it was him for the first couple of times I heard it.
Yeah.
But I do really like it. It's so fast, though. Like, it's so, like, the vocal line is, like, really, really fast. So I'm very curious about how they're going to do that and how they're going to pull it off, if you know what I mean. Like, it has almost a semi-spoken bit that's, like, the beat of the vocals is incredibly fast, so we should just have to see how that goes, I suppose.
Isn't the biggest Ed Sheeran song, A-Team, that I find the most shocking that they haven't covered yet?
Absolutely no way they'd do A-Team. No way. No reason for it, because it's about drug addiction and prostitutes. That's what the lyrics are about.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Like, there's no reason that song would fit into the show, and if they wanted to do it just because it was popular, they'd pick another Ed Sheeran song, because those that's what it refers to, like, and they say she's in the Class A team, they're talking about Class A drugs, and, it's about him going to a shelter for women and meeting a bunch of, you know, drug-addicted women who have become prostitutes.
Oh.
So there's not really any way that they'd do that song on Glee.
I'm surprised they haven't done Lego House or Give Me Love. Like, and even like what you said, if they were to try and do Small Bump because it was popular, it'd be so inappropriate.
Mm. Yeah. Lots of Ed Sheeran songs are fairly inappropriate for...
Oh, Glee, yeah, I know, yeah.
Honestly. But,
Is he considered more of a rapper or singer or a hybrid?
He's not a rapper. He's a chubby white English dude with a guitar. It's just Sing is just a really fast-paced... It's not rap, it's just a really fast-paced vocal line. Kind of like, you know, not in any way the same theme, but, you know, like, 1 Week by Bare Naked Ladies, and how it just has a really fast, like, vocal line.
Mm.
It's really famous, you might be too young to remember it.
At least I know Bare Naked Ladies, huh?
Yeah.
He does rap, though. He does rap, like, in You and I and that, like, you know... Oh. You need me, I don't need you. I wouldn't call him a rapper. I wouldn't call him a hip-hop artist, but he does rap.
I suppose.
He's not the male equivalent of Iggy Iglesias or whatever her name is.
Iggy Azalea.
Let's get fancy on Glee.
Oh, they will do. They will probably do that.
They will. They will.
He's an indie rapper. How about that? New genre, indie rap. But no, he's not the male Iggy. He's like a... you know, guitar-toting indie rock soloist who happens to have some very fast-paced lyrics at points. Sing will be interesting. I think it's a good choice if they're going to do Ed Sheeran.
Songs titled Sing can they do on Glee? This is like the third that I can count in my head.
Romance and this other one. Will and Mike
Yeah,
do
Will
it.
And Mike yeah. Chang singing it and dancing.
It's Tina and Mike.
I got what you were saying. Yeah, and he can't sing.
I can never really sing. Anyway. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. There are lots of songs in the world called Sing. I'm sure that, you know, they could have done a whole episode with songs just called Sing. but yeah, I'm sort of most interested in Karma Chameleon, because I think that's a really great, like, sing-along song, and I'm surprised that that's, like, a solo from Rachel, if it'll have, like, a weird arrangement or any backup or anything like that.
I mean, it's kind of cheesy, isn't it?
No, I love it. I love it. It's such a good vocal line. Factor. It's not the cheesiness of it. It's the it's such a good, like, it just, the vocal line, the melodically, that song is like, it's like a gift. It's
I can't think of the bridge. I can only think of the chorus.
It's got such a good sound, and I love anyone who covers it, basically. Like, and I'm just curious how they're going to do it with her. But anyway, does anyone have any, you know, Jack, further thoughts on the what?
No, Jack singing in the background.
I'm a chameleon. Anyway, let's
come and go.
Has anyone got any sort of thoughts on any of the, you know, the spoilers or the songs or the news or anything you'd really like to see now that we've heard some spoilers? Like, Caitlin, any thoughts for starting season six?
Oh, the Karofsky thing isn't a real relationship.
Yeah, let's keep our fingers crossed that they're, like, trolling.
Yes.
But I don't want Clayne to get back together, though.
They will. I don't want them to, but they will.
This would be a good time. Oh, actually, you know, I have a hope. I have a hope that, yes, Natalie, you're correct on Clayne not getting back together, and Blaine singing Taylor Swift's We're Never Gonna Get Back Together to Kurt, and making that, like, the final interaction they're having, and that's done. Because that's a really kind of like a I'm gonna kick you in the face if you come near me again kind of song. And I think that's maybe what's deserved, in my opinion.
Jesus.
Oh, I can feel the pitchfork sharpening.
I'm surprised they haven't done something off that album, actually.
Yeah,
I'm surprised. Now that you just said Blaine to sing that song, I feel like I can picture it so vividly in my head. I'm surprised it hasn't happened already.
Yeah, he like as we often say, he's really good at covering female pop songs, and I think that's one of the hottest and most accurate to his current character situation that he would just shine in. I'd love it. I'd be all giddy if it really happened.
Jack?
I pretty much have just said everything. I still think, like, I really don't want Clayne to get back together as well, but I don't want their breakup to mess up Karofsky's character. My biggest thing that I want now out of everything we've just heard is what somebody has said about if Blaine and Karofsky are just faking their relationship, again, it's so over the top and ridiculous that it's actually not real. I want that so bad.
Yeah.
Let's just assume it's the gas leak in the chorus room. I don't know.
Oh my god.
And, yeah, you know, it should be of note that we should probably say something about Britannia and what we expect out of them, because...
Well, I don't think Heather's really listed as coming back. I think she's mentioned that she will for, like, an episode or so, like, probably the very final, but I don't think that Britannia are going to have a plot.
I mean, because they went to Lesbos and that was good. They were having...
They're together. They're back together and they're on tour. Like, I think she's one of the dancers for the tour and with Mercedes, if you know what I mean, like Santana and Mercedes. So,
yeah, that's why she was around during that final song.
Yeah, they are back together and that's about it. Like, I don't, you know, maybe Britney will be off doing another tour with another, you know, Beyonce or something.
But she's definitely on with her math stuff, I believe. She's,
you know, yeah, I think so. And then Santana will be having a plot.
Yeah, I would die if if this series ends with Mercedes more famous than Rachel.
Oh, that would hurt.
Oh, man.
Jesus. Yeah. I mean, I would like Will not to come back to McKinley. And I would like Jesse to come back and, you know, be Rachel's BFF / eventual husband. That is what I would like.
Can we just, like, dream up of Will's death, how it's going to happen?
No, we can't do that, but, you know, maybe.
The newbies did it, and they're in hiding, that's why they're
sweet hell.
Clap for you, Caitlin, that was good.
I want that fan fiction. I want, like, Ryder to have led, like, a campaign of, like, him and Unique and, like,
Sugar all, like, and Joe.
Taking down Will Schuster because he's...
And that's where Sugar and Joe have been all this time, planning the plot and then getting everyone else in on it.
Oh my god. Yeah, Sugar's got the money. Like, yeah.
Oh my god. What about freaking Rory? Oh, wow.
Rory got deported. We don't need Rory. Rory has a legitimate explanation for being, like, gone.
And Zyces, no, Zyces has to be the one with the final blow.
Yeah, but I think she graduated.
That's okay. She can come back.
She's got a wrestling scholarship at Harvard. She does. I'm
perfect. She's keeping her moves nice and sharp to crack his neck. That's gonna be the final blow, right there. Predicting it right here. Put money on it.
I don't think that's what's gonna happen at the end of Glee, sadly. But
one can hope.
We should probably go before this gets a bit too insane, because we've gone for a long time now. So, yeah. All right. Yeah, I guess we'll see you guys in a few weeks. And you can let us know how you'd like season 6 to go after hearing those spoilers, I suppose. See you in a couple of weeks for more of flashbacks from season 1. But yeah, so thank you to everyone for listening, and thank you for everyone to coming on. So bye-bye, Caitlin.
Bye.
Bye, Jack.
Bye.
Bye, Mitch.
I feel like we're in The Sound of Music. Goodbye.
Bye. Good night, Marta. Good night, Gretel. All right.